Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago here. Here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday.
Give me 2 for Tuesday.
Get your requests in right now, 312-981-7200. It's one artist, two songs. You request, and we'll play the bumps. That's how it works. Two for Tuesday this morning, so get them in now, 312-981-7200. That's coming up. And also coming up right after we take a break, our good friend Tom Appel is going to be here. It's time for his monthly visit. And if you have any car or automotive related question or concern, or you need some advice, anything that has to do with cars, call now. Tom is here to help you out. Any car or automotive question, he's the man. He's a publisher for Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check out consumerguide.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. But he's here live with us in just a couple of minutes to answer any and all of your car-related concerns and questions. So text them in or call them in, and Tom will be happy to answer any of the car questions that you have. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So the streak ended. James Holzhauer's streak on Jeopardy ended. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Plus, we're going to talk about the biggest winners in game show history. Yeah, and then we've got like inventions and ideas that were way ahead of their time. Then we're going to talk about some inventions from the 80s that never took off. Plus, some of the coolest and weirdest gadgets of the 80s. So we're doing a little invention stuff this morning and a little game show talk, considering that his streak ended yesterday. And I was telling Tom off the air that Facebook really blew up earlier this afternoon, because people who have the West Coast feed, who watch the West Coast feed of Jeopardy, spoiled it for people who didn't get to spoiled it for people who were further east by saying that his streak was over. And people went nuts. People were not happy that happened. So anyway, spoiler alert. So anyway, all right. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, 2 for Tuesday requests.
Yeah.
And of course, your questions for Tom when he gets here in a few minutes. And it's car and automotive questions. ConsumerGuide.com is the website. And again, our phone number is 312-981-7200. So yeah, that's what's going on. And again, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show, and download our podcast. They're free. Subscribe for free. You'll get them delivered to you. You go to like iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, subscribe free, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. All right, let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
All right. I was not watching the drama unfold on Jeopardy, because when Jeopardy is on, I'm usually asleep.
Yeah.
I was not watching this unfold, but man, people were mad.
Yeah, I
I really believe that it's someone. Luckily, no one spoiled it for me. Yeah. I had to see it myself. But if someone had spoiled that for me, I would have been more upset than if someone spoiled like Game of Thrones for me. Because I, you know, Game of Thrones is temporary. Jeopardy is forever.
Jeopardy is forever.
It is.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about some of the biggest winners in the history of game shows a little bit later on. Two Cubs won big yesterday.
Yeah,
that was nice.
Change of pace.
John Lester pitched really, really well, and the bats came to life. So that was fun. That was fun. And they were playing the Angels. Angels are no slouch, man.
No, sir. No, sir.
Oh, so that's cool. And they're playing tonight. Series begins at Wrigley against the Rockies.
Yeah, which I'm not worried about.
No, they're on a streak, though. The Rockies have won, like, I think 8 straight.
That's true, but...
They're still, like, 9 games behind the Dodgers. But the Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers keep winning. So,
that's true.
You know, So, you know, that if I got this stat right, Clayton Kershaw has 13 wins already?
I believe so.
That's ridiculous. I'm sure Joe Buck has it framed on his wall right now at home, and he's kissing it. But yeah, so anyway, that's pretty crazy though. That's incredible stats. But anyway, Cubs look good today. That was great. That was a lot of fun. And let's go to the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, man?
Doing very well.
All right. You were sleeping right during the Cubs game.
Yeah, I slept almost all day.
Yeah.
They're working on the outside of my building and doing some drill. They have to paint it. It's a tower, you know, 54 floors or whatever, and they have to paint it. So they drilled a bunch on it, and yeah, my sleep was terrible.
Man.
I stayed in bed a while.
That's not fun. Oh, well, I hope you get some rest.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It might be winter again before. I don't know how long they're going to be working on that, but I'm scared.
Okay.
I'm scared.
Well, all right. Don't be scared. You'll be able to get some rest.
Nap between newscasts.
Yeah, exactly. That's you can sleep right between newscasts. Don't worry about it. We'll wake you up when we need
okay.
you. So that's what's going on. A little bit later on in the show, I want to share with everybody the story that you just told me off the air, Vic, concerning again your lack of knowledge of music, and this involving the band Black Sabbath.
Thought you might like that.
Yeah, I'm going to share that a little bit later on because when I heard the story that you told me, I was like, wait a minute, boy, no. I mean, your lack of knowledge is pretty staggering.
Maybe historic.
Could be.
There's been no studies, but you're not really going out on a limb to call it historic.
yeah. I mean, I think it might even be worse than Patty's. I
don't know.
Because Patty's is. I mean, I've listened to Patty, them play songs for Patty and heard her identify them, and I just scream at the radio.
I think we're neck and neck, Patty. Really?
Yeah. It's pretty.
Her and
it's,
I are it's, pretty it, much the same.
It's pretty astonishing. Actually, it's pretty astonishing. Let me do this really quickly. Let me just say this really quickly. Now, Vic, you were at home, you were with Jeannie, and you were saying, hey, Tom played a song by Black Sabbath last night.
Yeah, I remember asking him about
and
it.
And you liked it.
Yesterday, yep.
And so you told that to Jeannie.
I said, who was that, Tom? Yes, so I told it to Jeannie when I got...
And what did she say?
Oh, she said, let's... Because I said, I might be a Black Sabbath fan. I've never listened to him before, but he played a riff, and I loved it. She goes, well, let's just see. She pulls open her iPad, and she's got two Black Sabbath albums on her iPad.
Good for her.
I couldn't believe it.
So you were all excited, and then she said...
And then I said...
She said, I also have Ozzy Osbourne.
Right.
And you?
Like a segue, like it's obvious. And I said, okay. I said, well, why is that obvious? She told me, well, he was in Black Sabbath. I didn't know that.
He didn't know that.
So I said, oh, I didn't know that. And she freaked. She lost her mind.
No, it's nuts.
He's the lead singer.
He was the lead singer for Black Sabbath, and you didn't know that. Do you just know him from the reality
show?
My
mouth dropped. I had no idea that Ozzy Osbourne was the lead singer of Black Sabbath.
That is insane. That really is insane.
Yeah,
that's ultra level. When I told Tom, he almost passed out when I told him the story.
I have to keep lowering the bar a little bit, and I'm not. Yeah. I mean that in the nicest way possible because I grew up a total music geek, and I really appreciate Vic getting in there.
It's amazing what he's doing,
awesome.
And we'll get the update on Friday as we do with Vic's picks. He's barreling his way through the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, to get some music knowledge. Then he's researching and learning, and it's really cool. So, and we'll get that Friday. But man, not knowing Ozzy Osbourne was the lead singer to Black Sabbath, that's a stunner, man. That's a stunner. All right, Vic.
I'm telling you, there will be more stunners.
Okay, All right, cool. All right, let's take a break. Cars are what we're going to be talking about. Our good pal, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, is going to join us, and we are talking automobile and cars and anything car-related that you have questions or concerns or advice that you need. It's 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. It's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Right now, though, we want to welcome back to the show for his monthly visit our good friend Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he is here to talk about automotive news, stories, some of the stuff that's on the blog at consumerguide.com, and to answer any and all of your automotive or car-related questions. 312-981-7200. And let's welcome Tom to the show. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I am very well, thank you.
Good, 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 good. Good to hear from you. Tell everybody about Consumer Guide, as we do every month.
Yeah, thanks. ConsumerGuide.com. That is a wonderful website for folks who do all of their new car and used car shopping. We don't trace you or send you off to dealers. That's just a great place to do some research. Our blog, which you can get to from there, is the CGDailyDrive.com blog. We try to have some fun with the auto news. We also go in depth on a lot of our test drives, and we look back at some really old and cool classic stuff as well.
Very cool. And we, you know, we obviously always talk about you know, some of the stuff that you've got up on the blog. And I cannot wait to get to the classic celebrity car commercials that you guys put up on the blog, because some of them are just magnificent. So
that was an excellent excuse for me to spend my day on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really funny, though. Really, really funny. So we'll describe some of these. I watched all of them. I cannot wait to talk to you about them. And again, as you said, you know, it's you know, celebrities are no strangers to car commercials.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, obviously right now, I guess it's the Matthew McConaughey ones that are kind of the most popular and the weirdest.
Yeah, that dude's been signed up again, so it's working. Lincoln thinks it's working.
Yeah, okay. There you go. There you go. I know that if I'm going to buy a car, I want to know about what Matthew McConaughey thinks of it. That's the thing.
First person I think of.
Exactly. Yeah. What are you driving? What have you been driving lately, Tom? Always start off with that.
I just picked up today the Lexus IS350 all-wheel drive F-Sport, which is a whole bunch of words.
Yeah.
This is Lexus's compact sedan. It's a very sporty thing, kind of a competitor for the BMW 3 Series. The version I have is about the most expensive version you can get. This is with the V6 engine instead of the Turbo 4 with all-wheel drive and in sporty F-Sport trim. I like almost everything about this car except one depressing fact, and it's I really don't fit in this car. This is not a good vehicle for tall guys and really not a good vehicle for wide guys. And a lot of small Japanese and German rear-drive cars are like this. The door openings are incredibly small. So if you're a big guy, this may not be the car for you.
Okay. What were you driving before that?
I just spent some time in the redesigned Kia Soul. I think everyone knows what the Soul is by now. They've updated that for 2019. Fresh exterior trim, more safety equipment, and a new turbocharged. Well, the turbocharged engine was there before, but it's more widely available now, which makes the vehicle a lot of fun.
Okay. Very, very cool. And any other, what has everybody else been driving around in the office?
You know, we just got through the office, and I think people have seen ads for this, the Kia Telluride. Mm. This is Kia's new big crossover, and it does not disappoint. It is big and brawny looking. It's roomy inside, and surprisingly, we're getting pretty good fuel economy despite the thing's mass. We got about 20 miles per gallon, which is surprisingly good for a vehicle of this size.
Wow, yeah. Wow, that is good, man.
Yeah, it's just a very nice vehicle. Rides and handles very well.
Very cool. All right, we've already got a call here, Tom, before we get to some of the news stories that we want to get to.
Sure.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Greg on WGN. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, how you doing, Mick?
Good.
Good. I am in my 50s, and for no reason at all, I feel an urge to get a pickup truck. I right now have a Chevy Bolt with a B, but when I was picking up the Bolt, I also saw the Chevy Colorado and thought that would be cool. So I really want you to just talk me out of it.
Well, wow, Tom, I think this is the first time we've ever had a call where somebody wants to talk you out of buying a car.
I don't think I can do that. The Chevy Colorado is sort of a 7/8 scale Silverado, and it's just kind of a nice size vehicle. I actually like it a lot. It's been a Consumer Guide Best Buy for a bunch of years. Here's one way to kind of talk you out of that vehicle. If you don't need the brawn of that vehicle and perhaps want something a little bit simpler, the Honda Ridgeline is a truly excellent vehicle. And that deserves a look. It rides and handles a little bit better. Gets slightly better mileage. Not as brawny, but probably a better all-around driver.
Okay. All right. Well, Greg, good luck with that.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay, man. Take care. All right. Let's get into some of these stories, and then we'll have some texts and some people calling in if they have automotive or car questions at 312-981-7200. So a big deal happened in terms of that have a story to do with red light traffic cameras, and this comes out of Texas. Governor Greg Abbott has actually banned the red light traffic cameras. This is a big deal, right?
It's a big deal because it is statewide.
Yeah.
It is a statewide ban. And this is an interesting story because there was a woman who, way back in 2013, her name is Kelly Cannon, had received a $75 ticket for something she didn't believe she had anything to do with. And I think, like most people who receive red light tickets, they're utterly baffled as to why, when, and where this whole thing happened and why they're out a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And they're really hard traditionally to fight. Well, she chose to fight it, and her campaign just snowballed, and she was able to have it out, get the lights outlawed in Arlington, Texas, which was a huge start. And once she had that kind of inertia behind her, she went on and led this huge campaign, but it finally went statewide, and I think that's huge.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a whole lot of actually energy fighting her. Apparently, a couple police departments sort of bemoaned the fact because apparently they kind of work. The stoplight cameras do work to reduce accidents in some cases. However, mostly they work to really, really annoy local residents.
Yeah, you know, it's been, I mean, obviously these things have been controversial since since the day that they were, installed or announced or whatever you say. But, a lot of people think it's just another reason to get revenue, for the state to get money from us for no good reason. But there are people who do maintain that, in intersections near schools or churches or, places like that, that they have cut down on the accidents or the traffic. And so it's an interesting sort of argument that's happened since these things have been in existence.
It is. It's super hard not to be cynical, too, though, because there's so many stories about how in some municipalities where they want to deduce the revenue, they would actually shorten the yellow light.
Yeah.
That's just incredibly cynical and purely revenue-driven.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think both sides have a decent argument here. I think it's like, I mean, some of these municipalities are using it to raise money and to just, get money from people. And others, are really concerned about the safety of people, in the streets and in the crosswalks.
Yeah, I know that a bunch of these were installed around Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that ultimately retailers found them to be distressing to customers and not really good for business. And I think most of them are gone now.
Mm. Well, they've got some down here on Michigan Avenue. Right at Ontario when you're going to turn left off of Michigan to go west on Ontario to get on the on the Kennedy. There's one there because you can only go on the green arrow.
Okay.
And so if you go when it's green, there's your flash right there. But there's one there. There's one right over here when we turn on to Wacker to go to work. Right off of Michigan, that's another one. There's a red light one there, and I know there's a bunch downtown, but I'm not sure. I did stories on this. Obviously, this is a pretty popular topic to talk about on the air because there's so many sides to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I did do a story some time ago, actually detailing the numbers what it generated, and it's just kind of astonishing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a lot of money, and they've made it relatively difficult for people to appeal, and the fine itself is just low enough that maybe you don't chase after appealing it.
Yeah, Yeah, but I mean, it all adds up, though, man. I mean, yeah. You know, when I read some of the numbers, I was just kind of really shocked by just how much revenue comes in because of these cameras. And most people I know are anti red light traffic cameras. They hate them.
Oh yeah. So. Well, I personally was burned by one in my neighborhood here, by the closest large intersection by us. I received a ticket twice in 2 weeks for doing something that, if a police officer was behind me, I would not have been ticketed. It's just that when I come to a stop, I start to make the turn as I'm stopping, and that was enough to trigger the light, and then yeah, that cost me $150.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah,
I mean that's
totally crazy.
It's all the and you know what it really is like, I guess it's just people who roll through. You
yeah.
know what I mean? And make their right, you know, but they don't come to a complete stop, and then they make the right-hand turn, but they roll through. And I guess that's the most common violation.
Yep.
Oh.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know people who just come to a complete stop and just sit there. just sit there. I know some people who don't turn right on red anymore in those intersections. They just won't do it, even if there's a car behind them honking.
Most of those people are in front of me in traffic.
All right, Tom, on that note, hold on a second, buddy.
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us, Consumer Guide Automotive, consumerguide.com. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And if you have any automotive or car-related questions, give us a call at 312-981-7200 for talk or text. More with Tom after the news, which is up after this. Welcome back. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You're in 2 for Tuesday. That means get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about the big long streak that ended on Jeopardy yesterday. And then we're going to talk about the biggest winners in game show history. And then lots of invention talk. And gadget talk coming up later. And phone lines are open, 312-981-7200 for talk or text. Right now we're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And if you want to jump in here with a question, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for talk or text. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, we have another question here from a caller.
Okay.
Here's Scott. Go ahead, Scott.
Before I ask Tom his question, I just want to say, Nick, I love your show.
Thank you.
Your new producer, I don't know if you realize this, but you guys have like this harmony thing going. It's just a gas to listen to you
Thanks,
guys
man.
Talk to each other.
I got to tell you, Scott, Tom and I have hit it off famously. I love working with this guy, and he's only been working on the show for what?
Three months?
Just about three months.
And it feels like I've been working with you for 3 years. And I mean that in a good way, not like, oh, God, I got to see this guy again. That's
every morning.
Yeah. No, I agree with you,
like
Scott.
Your long-lost brother.
Yeah, I agree with you,
really.
Scott. We get along great, and he does a fantastic job here. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, my question is, Tom, I'm a truck driver. I look at everything that goes by me and everything, and I saw a car hauler last week had 8 brand-new Jeep pickup trucks in it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've heard anything about them or what it's called or what they're going to be like, but they looked really nice. They were small, but
yeah, that is the insanely popular Jeep Gladiator.
The Jeep Gladiator.
Yeah, it is based on the Wrangler. It is a pickup truck. It rides on a longer wheelbase, and it is priced slightly above the Jeep Wrangler. So it is not a direct competitor for smaller midsize pickups. I have spent some time in the vehicle. It is absolutely a gas to drive off-road, and it's pretty nice on-road. But right now they can't make them fast enough. The Gladiator is literally a money-printing machine
now,
for
Tom,
Fiat Chrysler.
Is that because it's just like because Jeep has made a pickup, and they're like, ooh, we got to check this out?
That is exactly what's going on. Yeah, just fans have been calling for this for decades. Jeep built a pickup truck last time, in, I think it was in the mid-'80s, when they filtered out something called I can't remember the name of the pickup truck. Yeah, but it was a small pickup that they built in the 80s, and since then people have just been clamoring for a Jeep pickup, and now here it is.
It's a good truck there, Scott.
Okay, well, I'm going to go check it out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care, buddy. All right, there you go. All right, Tom. We got a couple of texts that have come in.
Okay.
815 area code says, we have a 2013 Toyota Prius with 109,000 miles on it, a Honda Accord with 105,000 miles on it, also a 2008 Nissan Altima, 140,000. They drive a lot. 140,000 miles on it. We never changed the transmission or the radiator fluid in any of these vehicles. Every time we go in for service, they tell us we need to change the transmission fluid and radiator fluid. My question is this necessary? Because over the years, people have told me not to do it either.
Oh, here's the thing. There's this old sort of wives' tale myth that with the transmission fluid, if you haven't done it for a long time, you shouldn't do it now. And I've heard a lot of people who seem to know what they're talking about say that, but I don't buy that. You should do it by the schedule in the owner's manual. And I don't know when that is, but it's not frequently, but by 100,000 miles, it should have happened. As for the coolant, you should absolutely do that. The coolant breaks down, which means that at some point it can freeze or it will boil over. Either way, you're not going to get a cooled or heated vehicle. So, yeah, the coolant's absolutely necessary. Getting to 100,000 miles, it sounds a little bit lucky. But, yeah, both of those things are necessary, and they should be done according to the owner's manual.
Okay. You got to do it then. All right. Very cool. Let's see. 224 area code says, I think Congress passed a law regarding backup cameras, but I think the exact year that manufacturers were to comply kept being pushed back. Where does that stand now?
I believe that as of May last year, every car built in America or sold in America was to be equipped with a backup camera.
Oh, okay.
And to the best of my knowledge, all of them now are.
Okay.
That's all light duty vehicles. This isn't true of medium duty trucks.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to a couple of news stories here. Electric car batteries can catch fire after an accident?
Yeah, this is an interesting story because it kind of got lost, and we haven't talked about it in a long time. But people might remember that in the earliest days of the Chevrolet Volt with a V, around 2011, when those were starting to show up, one of the things that had happened was a vehicle was crash tested. I believe it was by the government, but it might have been by the IIHS. But the vehicle was crash tested, did well in the crash test, and was then parked. And then a week later, it burst into flames.
Ooh.
Yeah, and this is a thing, and they call it thermal runaway, but apparently a damaged battery is something to be taken very seriously. Sometimes it happens at the point of the crash, though not very often, but once they're stored, internal damage to the battery can leave them fairly vulnerable to something like a fire. After the Chevy Volt incident, General Motors began distributing to dealers these devices that drain the battery of energy so that they're not subject to this possibly happening. But there have been a couple of cases recently. There was a Tesla Model S recently that burst into flames. I think it was late last year. But I did some checking. Statistics aren't that easy to find. These fires aren't that common. In 2000, I think it was 14, there were six models, and I don't know how many vehicles per model that was, that suffered some sort of battery fire as a result of an impact. It's not common, but it is a big deal if you're someone in the emergency services business who has to know about these things and deal with them.
Well, what are they doing about this? Is there anything that can be done?
Yeah, what has to happen, first of all, if the battery is actually on fire, apparently it's a fairly messy business to try to put the fire out. You need a lot of water and a lot of time. But the batteries need to be drained after an accident, even if there was no fire, because the battery that is still charged is dangerous after an impact.
Okay. Wow, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
I mean, people are keeping an eye on this story now?
It seems to be, yeah. It's not common that this happened. I did read in Bloomberg recently that about 250,000 of the roughly 1 million firefighters in the country have been trained on how to deal with an electrical vehicle accident.
Wow.
So the word is spreading.
Okay. All right. Interesting. This was that story I'm talking about was in the Trib. So it's in the Chicago Tribune if you want to read it in more detail. Another text, Tom. 331 area code says, how is the Kia Soul for tall and wide drivers? I have a 2003 Chevy Tracker, which is not a good fit.
No, the Soul is excellent.
Is it?
It is absolutely excellent for the big and wide drivers such as myself, and it's really good for the tall driver. The only problem for tall folks is that if you're over 6'4", 6'5", something like that, you're going to have a hard time seeing stoplights because the hood extends in front of you, so you're going to have to kind of duck down to see the light. So that's kind of an annoyance, but there's plenty of headroom.
Okay. All right. There you go. What's going on with Ford? It's not been a good time for Ford, has it?
No, the Ford thing is interesting because it's a little unclear exactly what they're acting on. Ford has announced about 7,000 layoffs, although those numbers include 1,400 people that took voluntary buyouts last year. So roughly 2,000 more people in America are going to be laid off, and then another 3,500-ish globally. Ford is suffering a sales downturn in the U.S. and in China, and some profitability declines in both those markets as well. But it's not entirely clear what Ford is responding to here. One of the theories I have is that Ford is working on a couple of joint ventures that they've been a little bit vague about that may put them in a position simply to require less engineering and marketing assistant. Ford has famously been courting Volkswagen in Europe for a couple of joint venture projects.
Right.
And one of them is to build delivery vans, and that's not a really big deal. The big deal there is if they decide to shake hands on electric cars, which is what a lot of people think they're about to announce. And if they were to do that, Ford would be relieved of needing an awful lot of engineering help.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, they were hit hard by the trade wars, though, right?
Yeah, they are. Ford has not had the kind of success in China that some companies have. General Motors, for example, has done very well in China. In the last couple of years, Ford has introduced the Lincoln brand in China, and that's been doing well. But, yeah, trade with China, of course, is messy, and Ford imports its vehicles to China, which complicates things.
Yeah. Well, we keep an eye on what's happening with Ford then. Okay. So there's a piece that was written in the blog a few weeks ago, Police Van. tell her about Police Van. And I love this, you know, when in reading this piece, Tom, it reminds me of the scene at the beginning of the Blues Brothers when Jake picks up Elwood, or Elwood picks up Jake and, from prison. And he's explaining the car that they have, the Bluesmobile car that they have now. And it's got cop brakes, it's got cop shocks, you know what I mean? and so I always thought that was really funny because I've always, you know, I've known that police officers and drive different cars than we do, and they're made specifically for, you know, emergency services and police in police work.
Generally, yes, yeah.
Yeah, but that I always laugh at that. Like, it's got cop shocks, it's got a cop engine, that whole thing. And that's what I thought of when I was reading Police Van. So tell everybody a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I hate to let everyone down, but Police Van is not as cool as it should be. I spend some time, every year or so, I'll spend some time looking around the General Motors, the Fiat Chrysler, and the Ford fleet pages. And anyone can go do this. These are not password protected, and there's some great stuff there.
Yeah.
And the police stuff is totally awesome, because there are some Pursuit Ram pickups that are more badass than I could possibly explain.
Yeah.
But the van, the only company right now selling a van for police use, specifically for police use, is Chevrolet. And this is the Express, a vehicle I think a lot of people don't even know still exists. So the cool part about this is you can get it with steel wheels and get it painted any way you want to, and with the Mars light on top, which is totally cool looking. And it's also available with the General Motors 6-liter V8, which is a fairly punchy V8, so that's cool, too. The bad news is the cop shocks, cop suspension, not there.
Oh, no!
No, yeah, there's no upgrade suspension, and this kind of bums me out.
Wow. And so now you've gone through and checked out some of these other vehicles. They've got to be pretty, some of them have got to be pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, some of them are pretty cool. General Motors, famously, and I think you see these all over Chicago, makes a police version of the Chevrolet Tahoe SUV. And that's a pretty good package. That's got some serious suspension upgrades, and that's pretty cool. And I think that retired versions of that are in fairly high demand.
Oh, I bet. I bet. So the police van with the exclamation point even is disappointing.
It is, yeah. I just really thought it was cool. And I may have just gone a little crazy with the headline.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sucked me in, I'll tell you right there, Tom. So, yeah. All right, Tom, we got a couple more texts coming in, and then we're going to get to some of the other stories. And if you have a question, at 312-981-7200, and then we're going to talk about some classic celebrity car commercials, which Tom wrote about. And you can see these commercials at the Daily Drive blog. They're there, conveniently located right there. Click onto it and watch these little gifts from God right there. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. He's great. He joins us once a month. Publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we're going to come back and take some more of your questions, talk a little bit more car stories as well, right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Give me a 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in right now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Well, the streak has ended. James Holzhauer's streak has ended on Jeopardy. We're going to talk about that and then talk about some of the biggest winners in the game show history. And then we got some inventions and some gadget stuff that we're going to be... chatting about. Phone lines are always open. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Our guest right now is Tom Appel. He joins us once a month. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. ConsumerGuide.com is the website. And welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, couple of texts here.
Okay.
815 area code says, in 2015, Tom helped me when my new Ford F-250 had its turbo go out, and the dealer had it for 3 months. It's gone out two more times.
Whoa.
To arrange for Ford to give me the platinum warranty, so it was covered. It has 80,000 miles on it, and it will be paid off soon. What do you think is currently the best diesel pickup? I pull a three-horse gooseneck trailer with it. I'm also tired of getting the drive to the clean exhaust filter warning. Thanks.
Yeah, unfortunately, the clean exhaust warning and the DEF, diesel exhaust fluid thing, that's just a reality now across the board. And the fluid's not very expensive, but I guess it's a pain to have to add all the time. The best diesel is tough to say. The diesel in the Chevy and the GMC and the Silverado and the... Sierra, the Duramax diesel, is incredibly smooth, and that's a good way to go. Although I think that, and I don't know if this is true or not, but anecdotally speaking, the Cummins diesel that is in the Ram 2500 and 3500 has a reputation for serious durability. I don't know how well that's earned, and I haven't seen statistics, but the reputation is out there. I think your best bet is probably checking around on a lot of message boards just to see where these things fail, because the guys that own these diesel pickups are very serious advocates of the technology, and there's a lot out there that you can research.
Okay. All right. You helped this person out back in 2015. There you go.
I don't remember that, but I'm glad I could help.
Okay. Terry sends in a text. What does Tom say is the best overall car for the environment?
Wow, for the environment.
Yeah.
Best car for the environment. There's all this argument that the batteries in electric cars are not green themselves, that they use a lot of energy and a lot of carbon is emitted in the production of those batteries, and the disposal of them is going to make them not green. So if we just avoid electric cars now while that argument is being made, I still like the Prius. I love the Toyota Prius. It's just a very drivable car that can get 50, 60, 70 miles per gallon. And I really like the new Honda Insight a lot, which is just a hybrid version. It's wrong to call it a version of the Civic. It's a separate model, and it's a little bit more nicely equipped, but that's a very nice vehicle to drive. But another great one is the Honda Accord Hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Great car. Roomy, nice handling, really a great car.
Okay. All right. There's plenty of choices then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So let's go to the Hollywood Madness piece that you wrote. 12 classic celebrity car commercials. And after we let you go, after the news, Tom, we're going to play some of the audio from these for the audience so that they can hear just how crazy some of these are.
Awesome.
So you dug these out, looked them up, and because we just, as you mentioned earlier, Matthew McConaughey's signed on again to sell more cars for Lincoln.
He has, yeah.
And you went back in time and in chronological order placed some of these classic celebrity cars commercials, and Abe Vigoda for the 1968 AMC Rebel.
This is a personal favorite.
Yeah.
Abe Vigoda is so awesome.
Yeah.
And he's kind of wacky in this commercial. You never really think of Abe Vigoda as wacky.
Right. And not only that, it's like a whole bunch of like, do I know that character actor? And who is that guy? You know what I mean? Like, they're all just kind of running around. One guy's in the trunk of the car. One guy, you know, they're carrying the giant engine in at one point.
Yeah, I think every person in this commercial that isn't a Vagoda probably had at least one walk-on in Archie Bunker's place.
I think you're right. Now, this next one I've seen many times, and it is ridiculous. Robert De Niro for the 1970 AMC Ambassador. Like, I really want the guy, I want Travis Bickle to sell me a car. That seems real healthy. But this commercial just reinforces every kind of Italian stereotype you can possibly imagine in a minute.
It really does.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I love this commercial so much.
I do, too.
I just watch this commercial during the day for no reason.
Yeah, no, I love it, too. And it was funny. When they gave the American Film Institute gave him, like, a Lifetime Achievement Award, they showed that.
Which is only fair. I think
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, now here's...
We should know where he came from.
Here's a weird one. Don Knotts for the 1971 Dodge Strongbox. this is a very strange one. Well, first of all, you write, why would you have Don Knotts be the guy to help you sell the truck?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that they're playing on his tough guy image, which makes no sense to me whatsoever.
<I know. laughs> man. And it's just him. And it's got a very weird ending. It's just him screaming while a woman comes on split screen and says, let's interrupt the man having the fit here. And I can give you more details about the truck.
Yeah, it's very weird. He's very passionate about panel vans, though. So
yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Shatner, of course, William Shatner for the 71 Plymouth Fury and Satellite. By the way, the Satellite was a cool-looking car.
That's a great-looking car.
Man, when I was watching the commercial, I was like, damn, that's a cool-looking car.
Yeah, I love that car.
Yeah, and so, you know, Shatner's been, you know, he's been around for a long time doing that, but I do love the fact, you know, because Ricardo Montalban is, of course, on this list. You can't not have Ricardo Montalban on the list.
Absolutely.
But I do love the fact that you pulled out that wonderful thing where the ship that Khan steals in Wrath of Khan is the Reliant.
Yes.
And that's from the Chrysler Corporation. So I think that that's pretty funny.
Yeah, the Ricardo Montalban commercial is awesome because this is not the first go-round. He first appeared in 1975 for the original Cordoba. This is the replacement, the 80 Cordoba. And as good a line as the rich Corinthian leather is the, I like what they've done to my car.
Yeah.
I love that
I
line.
Like that too, man. He was so smooth, so smooth. Glenn Ford, all serious, 1978 Buick Electra.
Yeah, this is very serious.
Yeah.
He's very sternly telling us that Buick is known for luxury.
Yeah. And another very serious one, Robert Stack for Ford in 1981.
That's a weird ad, and I had to do a little research on this, but apparently we were pulling out of a recession in 1981. I don't remember it well, and it wasn't much of a recession, but I think that a lot of car buyers were still stunned by the stagflation of 1979 and 1980, where car loans were just really hard to get and very expensive.
Yeah.
And I think this might have been a response to that.
That's what it's, I guess, yeah, after, you know, watching it with that background, that it made a little more sense. But I still, I can't, you know, every time I see Robert Stack, I think of Unsolved Mysteries or Airplane, for God's sake. I mean, that's things that I think of. Wilt Chamberlain for the 1979 Volkswagen Rabbit, and the idea here was, oh, it's so roomy that Wilt Chamberlain can drive it.
That's exactly it. And this is actually a follow-up to an ad from the 60s where he appeared in basketball uniform trying to squeeze into a Beetle but couldn't. So he didn't fit into a Beetle, but a shorter teammate did.
Mm.
So while he's talking about the Beetle, someone sneaks up also in uniform and drives away in the Beetle. It's kind of a funny ad.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, so this is sort of a follow-up to that much later when the rabbit was introduced.
Okay. And then Ruth Gordon, I totally remember this one. I remember this one, 1984 Subaru Brat. I absolutely, because I love Ruth Gordon.
I don't remember this ad.
Oh, man.
Why would she even know what a Subaru Brat is?
I don't know, but, like, it was just, I mean, it was just, you know, it was at a time, and you mentioned this, Any Which Way You Can and all that stuff, that was what was happening with her, and she was, you know, in those movies, she's on a shotgun, she's on a porch with a shotgun shooting at people, and that's kind of the attitude she has during the course of this commercial.
I don't know if this helps sell Subarus or not,
yeah.
But this is pure cultural gold.
Oh, it's fantastic. James Garner for the Mazda pickup. Here's the thing that you point out, and I couldn't not unhear it, is the way he says Mazda. He says Mazda.
He says Mazda. Now, this is one of the first ads he did for Mazda,
yeah.
And he did them for several years, and by the end of that run, he was saying Mazda.
Oh, okay.
So I guess I just didn't want to tell Mr. Garner how to pronounce that.
Now, you don't want to give notes to James Garner, are you kidding me?
No.
And then we got George C. Scott for the medallion. And then an amazing commercial, Ray Charles in a Peugeot. You wouldn't think Ray Charles would be in a car commercial because he's blind.
Right.
But it's a great commercial.
Yeah, here he is driving the Peugeot 306 through the Bonneville Salt Flats.
Yeah.
And apparently that's enough space where he couldn't do any damage.
That's amazing.
And they let him drive. And by all accounts, he had a wonderful time doing this commercial. So
yeah.
It's really cool to watch.
It is great. It's great. Man, that's a lot of fun. People, check it out. That he wrote some funny stuff, and you can see these commercials if you go to the Daily Drive blog. And we're going to play some of the audio after we after the news, because some of it's very, very, very funny. Tom, it's always a pleasure, and everybody can follow you at Twitter at car_guy_Tom and check out consumerguide.com. And have a good month. We'll talk to you next month.
Thanks. The pleasure was all mine.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Tom Appel, everybody. He'll be back next month. Let's take a break. News is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk about some of the biggest winners in game show history. James Holzhauer's streak has ended. We'll talk about that and then get into some of the other big winners from game show history. We're going to talk some inventions that never took off, some ideas that were way ahead of its time, and some gadgets from the 80s. All that and more. 312-981-7200. Two for Tuesday just kicked off. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Who requested The Rush?
That was Scott from Streamwood. Wanted to hear a little YYZ.
Yeah, it's a jam.
Yeah, so named. Do you know where the name comes from?
No, go ahead.
It's the, you know how O'Hare has ORD? All airports have a three-letter.
Oh, okay.
Thing. YYZ is Toronto.
Oh, okay. Oh, look at that. Little Rush trivia for everybody this morning.
I was very into Rush when I was 15.
Oh, I'm still into Rush. I love Rush. I think they're great.
I'll throw on Moving Pictures every once in a while.
Moving Pictures is a great album, yeah. Man. It's like a great album. I saw them on that tour.
Oh, on the original Moving Pictures tour?
Yeah, 1981 at the Rosemont Horizon. And we had great seats. We were like 8th row center.
Awesome.
And I was standing on the seats. We were all standing on the chairs because, you know, tendency to do that. Mm-hmm. So we're all standing on the chairs, and all of a sudden I feel some warm liquid hit the back of my leg. And I turn around, a guy had puked all over the back of my leg.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it went into my shoe. And so I turn around, I look, and I see this vomit all over my leg. And I'm like, what the? You know, and I look at the guy, and the guy's like, sorry, dude, I lost it. This was during the show. So I obviously there's puke all over my leg. So I go to the bathroom. You know, people are running away from me. I walk into the bathroom. I stick my shoe into the sink, my leg, and I wash off as the best I could.
Jeez.
And then that was about three songs in. So there was still like 2 hours left.
Yeah.
So the guy's like, I'll buy you a beer. And I'm like, dude, I'm 15. It was like 16 years old, 1981. Or no, it was early 1981 because it was winter. And then the walk to the car was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
With my sopping wet shoe and foot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, my Converse All-Star soaked in, you know, water that had been vomited in, and it was I mean, the show was great.
Sure, they put on an amazing show.
They're unbelievable.
I saw them in 2010 when I was about 15, and that was when they played Moving Pictures in its entirety.
Oh, please.
And that was up at Summerfest.
Alpine? Oh, Summerfest?
Yeah.
Oh, so in Milwaukee.
Yeah, in Milwaukee. I took my cousin from Scotland who had never heard of Rush before.
Oh, man.
He had never listened to Rush a day in his life, and we watched it, and he's just like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. I was like, I know.
I bet Vic has no idea who Rush is.
No?
Vic?
I could not name a song, no. I was wondering if maybe this guy and me should hook up and do this together.
Yeah, no.
That's not a good thing to say on your show.
I think maybe. Do you think maybe he'd recognize Spirit of the Radio?
Perhaps. There's a few, Tom Sawyer.
There's a few cuts. Some things I am recognizing.
I think you would. I mean, listen, Rush is a classic in FM rock. I mean, a staple. An absolute staple.
Especially when the DJ had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're also a divisive band. I know a lot of people who hate Rush.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hate them. I love them. I think they're great. I've always thought they were great. So, you know, a lot of people, they have an issue. What they have, you know, one of the things they have an issue with is Geddy Lee's voice. A lot of people have an issue with Geddy Lee's voice.
I mean, it's a very unique voice. It's like Neil Young's voice. You just kind of like either like it or you don't.
I love Neil Young, man.
Yeah.
Speaking of Canadian. Hey, no, I'm a big Rush guy. So we get to hear another Rush song.
Yeah, looking forward
to
it.
Cool. Okay. So we were talking with our buddy Tom Appel. It's always such a blast to talk. It's such a blast. I look forward to talking to Tom every month, and I don't drive. I've not driven in 20 years.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No. I don't drive. I've not driven in 20 years. I haven't had a car in 20 years.
Wow.
1999 was the last time last time I legally drove. last time I legally drove. I have an ID, but I don't have a driver's license. I don't, it's not that I don't know how to drive. I drove for many, many, many years. But, you know, after my first divorce, I was like, you know what? I don't want to keep up these payments. I'm saving on insurance. I'm saving on, you know, gas and upkeep. And I was, you know, and granted that, you know, I take public, transit now. I take a lot of cabs and my dad loves to drive. So he's like, I'll give you a ride anywhere you want. So he gives me rides, you know, and stuff like that. But I've not had a major issue in 20 years where I was like, man, I wish I had a car.
Yeah. I recently got rid of the car that I had, which was a 1998 Saturn sedan.
Yeah.
And me and my girlfriend really, really have no problem with it. Most places we're going, we can get pretty easily by public transit.
That's the thing. If I need to go someplace, you know, that's not easy to get to via public transportation or something like that. You know, usually if I'm going with a group of people, I'll jump in a car with somebody else, or there's always a way for me to get to where I need to go.
Sure.
So I really do think I'm making out better financially by not having a car. I think that that's absolutely true. And the cars that I had were in the shop constantly. I had a Firebird, a 1977 Firebird, that spent more time in the shop than it did on the streets. And I drove that car. All of the cars that I've ever had, I drove them into the ground. And my Ford Escort. And by the way, Tom, if you ever want to pick up chicks, get a gray 1986 Ford Escort. It works out great.
Oh, good. I'm sure. I mean, my girlfriend's been telling me you got to bring someone else into the
chicks love the
situation.
Chicks love the hatchback. They do. I drove that thing into the ground and gave it to Victory Auto Wreckers.
Yeah.
Had Victory Auto Wreckers come out and pick it up. And I remember when the guy came out, he pulled up in the truck in front of my apartment building and, you know, Victory Auto Wreckers. And I was like, hey, man, where's your big leather watch strap? Like, he's never heard that before. Like, this guy, you know, he drives for Victory Auto Wreckers. And I was like, hey, watch me open the door. It's going to fall off. Not cracking a smile, looking at me like, yeah, that's real funny, man. You know, that's like, I've never heard that before.
I think you just got Dean Richards like 12 cents for that.
Mention. I don't know what I got. I can't remember what he gave me for the car. I think it was 50 bucks or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the car is a piece of crap. I mean, I just drove it to death.
I sold mine to CarMax. I got totally ripped off, man.
Did you?
Yeah, I think they gave me maybe about $300 for the car. And I was like, well, it's not passing the emissions test. So, like, I'm not, it's $400 for me to do that and, like, not have to do it again. But I actually looked for it. I was like, oh, I wonder what they're selling it at. Selling it at like $1,500.
Yeah.
98 sedan because it was it's in good condition.
Yeah.
I was really upset.
Yeah. I mean, this car would not, my Escort would not sell it. Nobody could sell it. I'm sure they brought it to Victory Auto Records and just stripped it for parts. There's no question about it. But, yeah, I like that car. I like my Ford Escort. I did. And I loved my Firebird. I loved that car.
Now, at the time, I'm guessing that was a real, real hot thing on the streets when it was
You know, I mean, I had that car in the 80s.
Okay.
I had that car in the mid-late 80s into the early... mid to late 80s I had that car. Got rid of it because I got the Escort in 90. The Escort was 4 years old. It was 86. So I got the Escort in 90. By the time I was driving that Firebird, it was 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was a 77, and I was driving it like around 86, 87, 88, 89, that kind of time. But I love that car. But again, that's another one that was in the shop constantly.
Mm.
That Firebird, man. And the thing about a Firebird, have you ever driven a Firebird?
No, but there were a couple people in Crystal Lake that were classic car guys. There were a lot of classic car guys in the suburbs. And one of them had probably a 77 Firebird. And I always really admired
it. They're cool cars.
I thought it was a cool looking, yeah.
Mine was cranberry colored with cranberry interior. Your fake vinyl cranberry interior.
Wow.
That was badass, man.
did it have the big eagle on the front?
No, that's a Camaro.
Really?
Yeah. Firebird. No, it didn't have the Firebird. No, it did not. I did not have the Burt Reynolds.
No.
No, I did not have the flaming bird on the. The logo was on the frame of the front frame of the car and on the back frame.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no giant. No, it was just cranberry all the way through.
Yeah.
But the thing about the Firebird is, it's all hood and no trunk. So when you're first like parallel parking, it's really like disorienting because the trunk's like 20 feet long. The hood is like 20 feet long and it barely has a trunk. It slopes down. There's nothing to it. But yeah, it was fun to have that car. But anyway, this all came about because I was saying how much fun it is to talk to Tom. And I'm always fascinated to hear about the car stories that he tells. And it's really a lot of fun for the listeners to call in and get their questions answered. But he wrote this piece, Hollywood Madness 12 Classic Celebrity Car Commercials. And some of these are just fantastic. And I wanted to play some of the audio from them. Like the first one here is let's do the De Niro one first. This is Robert De Niro for the 1970 AMC Ambassador. This is long before he played the cabbie and taxi driver. Robert De Niro was piloting this 70 AMC Ambassador through the streets of New York City. And in this commercial, De Niro's folks seem pretty impressed by standard air conditioning. Now you have to understand this. When you hear this commercial, you're going to hear an incredible reinforcement of every ridiculous Italian stereotype that you could, New York Italian stereotype that you can possibly imagine. And he's also doing, the hand gestures. He's doing the, hey, what are you doing? And he's doing the old hand gesture. But yeah, let's hear this. This is De Niro in 1970.
Hey, I like this big shot. Company is out of college and he's buying expensive cars.
Joey, you need such an expensive car.
CPAs make money. Right, Joey?
Hey, Mama, it didn't cost so much. Hey, Richie, get the sneakers off the seat, will you, please?
Ah, Joey, got air conditioning.
Joey, so fancy.
Come on, the ambassador comes that way. Hey, come on, let's go for a ride, huh?
Joey, the way I'm dressed?
You look beautiful.
That fantastic. You look beautiful.
Oh my god.
Hey, get your sneakers off the seat. Hey.
My dad's not even Italian and he used to kind of do that.
Hey. Oh. That's like when all the criticism when The Last Temptation of Christ came out and all the criticism came out because like Harvey Keitel had like the New York accent and you know nobody even bothered. I mean, I love Last Temptation of Christ. I think it's
New Yorkers in Bible times.
Well, no, it's like so when I reenact.
Oh Jesus!
Oh Jesus! Hey, that was What are you doing? That was water. Now it's wine. What the hell? Oh! Come on, Jesus! Oh!
I was thirsty.
Oh. Where'd all this fish come from? Oh, Jesus! Oh! That's like Martin Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ. I'm gonna wash my hands of you! Oh! It's still a great movie. I'm just mocking. I'm just making fun of it. But I love that movie. I adore that movie. Okay, a few more of these ridiculous celebrity car commercials when we take a break after we get back. This is, okay, I gotta say, this is maybe the silliest song that they have. This Trees, this is the silliest song they've ever written. Yeah. I mean, Neil Peart's lyrics were pretty dumb, but...
There was unrest in the forest. There was trouble with the trees.
What the hell are we talking about?
Hey, man, I love that.
Oh, I love the song. Yeah. It's ridiculous, but I love it. But yeah, yeah.
Your man's singing about trees and such.
Yeah. Canadian trees. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Two for Tuesday, man. Yeah, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in, and it's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. A couple of texts came in to let us know that it was indeed the Trans Am that had the...
See, that's what I was
saying. The decal. That's the car that... that's the car, the classic car that Burt Reynolds drove in Smokey and the Bandit. And they also call it the Screaming Chicken Trans Am. So, Sam sends in a text that says, I was at that Rush show. That was an awesome tour. Sam, did anybody vomit on you? That's the big question.
Maybe Sam vomited on you, man.
Maybe that was Sam, who's like, oh, sorry. sorry, dude, I lost it. Yeah, on my leg and in my shoe. Oh, what are you doing? Should have went massive Italian. Should have went massive Bethlehem on him. Oh! Hey, oh, the meek. They inherit the earth. Oh! All right. Let's hear Don Knotts. Don Knotts did a commercial. We're talking about these car commercials, these goofy car commercials. Tom Appel from Consumer Guide was with us a little bit earlier on, and he published this on their blog with all the commercials. These are all ridiculous celebrity car commercials. So this is from 1971 when Don Knotts was hired to advertise the Dodge Tradesman Strongbox. He also did commercials for Plymouth Grape Nuts cereal and Gaines Meals dog food. You know, remember Gaines? You're too young.
Way too young.
Gaines Meal was it came in package and it was shaped like a hamburger patty, and you would crush it up into the. I'm not kidding. Gaines Burger was shaped like it was a dog food. It was shaped like a, and you would crush it up into the dish for the
maybe,
dog.
Maybe he'll think he's eating a hamburger.
That's what it was. I mean, I think people who saw the commercial went, "Oh, that looks like a hamburger. That'd be good for my dog." You know what I mean?
Yeah. My dog loves hamburgers.
Gaines Burgers, man.
Love them.
They were called Gaines Burgers.
I definitely tried bacon strips one time when I was a kid.
Oh, my God.
Because I was like, well, maybe it does taste like bacon.
Yeah, right. That must have been a good move for you.
Very salty.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, here's Don Knotts from 1971 trying to sell you a Dodge.
Action. Hi there, van fans. This is the all-new 1971 Dodge Strongbox. The big tradesman van with a package of 31 features you can't get on any other van at the Dodge Boys now.
Kurt, no, you gotta make it tougher. Let's do one more.
Hey, will you? Look at that. This baby's got the optional power steering, power brakes, and load flight transmission.
Okay, Don, let's shoot it. Action.
Okay, listen up out there. This is the all-new 1971 Dodge Strongbox. The big tradesman van with a package of 31 features you can't get on any other van at the Dodge Boys now.
Don, I don't know, but there's something wrong with this commercial.
I'll tell you what's wrong. Why don't mention the wide cargo door, or the hidden cargo step, or the optional dash-mounted air conditioning, or the 26-gallon gas tank?
The Dodge Strongbox. See it at your Dodge Boys.
Yeah, there it is. And he goes a little nuts there at the end. Don Knotts. All right, the next one is also from 1971, and it's Shatner. And these are two short spots, one for the Plymouth Fury and one for the Plymouth Satellite. And as I was mentioning to Tom, the Plymouth Satellite was a badass looking car. I mean, in this commercial, if you guys are following along, check out what this if go or you just Google image the Plymouth Satellite. It was a really cool looking car. That's the first thing that hit me when I watched the commercial. But of course, you'll recognize Shatner right away, being all dramatic. Here we go.
Plymouth puts a lot of care to the building and engineering of their cars. And when you have a good product, you'll go out of your way to get people to buy it. So when you buy a 1971 Plymouth Fury, like this Fury Grand Coupe, equipped with features including air conditioning, power steering, power disc brakes, you get an automatic transmission at no extra charge. Honest.
So that's the Fury. That's the Fury. Here's the Satellite. Hey, look at that car, Tom.
It's a gorgeous vehicle.
This is the car that was chosen U.S. Car of the Year by Road Test Magazine. It's the 1971 Plymouth Satellite, a totally new automotive design. Built and engineered with extra care. Plymouth Satellite, the U.S. Car of the Year, the buy of the year. That's Chrysler Plymouth coming through.
There you go, Shatner.
That's an awesome car, man.
Beautiful car, man. As soon as I saw that commercial when I was before the show, I watched all these commercials, you know, prepping. And I was like, man, that's I don't remember that car. I mean, in 1971, I was six, so I don't remember that car. But man, it's cool. Really cool.
I'd drive that now.
Yeah. All right, let's move on because we're going to, we got a break here for the news. And so I want just one more here, and then we're going to talk about game show winning records after the news. But you got to get Ricardo Montalban in. So we got to do Ricardo Montalban, just the legend. And so here's Ricardo Montalban for the 1980 Cordoba.
Wait till you see what they did to my car.
With the Cordoba, we went back to the drawing boards. We wanted to get the gas mileage up, but not at the expense of the style.
Introducing the totally redesigned Chrysler Cordoba. All the luxury you expect is here. But so is gas mileage. You can have high style and good mileage. The new Cordoba proves it. I like what they've done to my car.
I love the music.
Yeah, the Spanish guitar.
Oh, I love that music, man. That is fantastic. So anyway, I thought we'd play a little bit of the audio. The whole article is up on their daily drive blog at consumerguide.com. So I suggest you check it out and read what Tom wrote and watch the rest of the commercials. Very entertaining stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. James Holzhauer's winning streak ended on Jeopardy, but we're going to go back and look at some of the biggest game show winners of all time. And if you want to jump in with some game show talk, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Got some classic rock fans listening this morning for Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Tell everybody who that is and who requested it.
Well, that was a little Joe Walsh there coming to us from Sam,
yeah.
Who may or may not have puked on you at a Rush concert. I'm going to say probably not. Probably okay, not. Yeah. But that's Turn to Stone.
Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for questions or comments or whatever if you want to jump in on the conversation. So and also for Two for Tuesday requests. Well, the Jeopardy streak has ended, everybody. As Steve Cochran told everybody at 6:30 in the morning.
I can't believe that. I can't believe he did that.
I didn't know he did it until I played the promo this morning.
I've been hearing that promo, so that's what happened.
Yeah, he spoiled it for big because it doesn't come out until 3:30 p.m. and he talked about it at 6:30 a.m.
I'm just curious how did he know that?
Well, they said it. I mean, tape it. They tape it ahead of time.
Well, I know it's pre-recorded, but and it hadn't.
I would imagine that like the production company sent out a press release or something.
There's some leaks.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. So people were not happy yesterday.
I've never
morning.
Done that.
No. No, not at all. It has nothing to do with Top Chef last year or the year
can't
before
believe
last.
People
it,
do that.
Yeah. Do you know the story then?
No. What'd you do, Vic?
Let me explain to you.
I did the news.
He did the news. He reported the news. I don't know if you know this or not, but I am obsessed with Top Chef.
You've mentioned
okay, it's
there.
It's my favorite reality show right now, and I love it. And I've loved it since season one. And I watch it. I watched Last Chance Kitchen right after I watched Top Chef, and I'm obsessed with it. So, the finale of Top Chef aired, and I slept, and I DVR'd it, and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it as soon as I get home from work. As soon as I walk in the door, DVR goes on, and I watch the finale. And this was two seasons ago. So, and I'm just very excited because there were I actually like the two chefs. One was from Chicago, Chef Joe from Chicago. So, I'm at work. We're here. We're doing, you know, what we're doing. and I throw it to Vic, and Vic, in his newscast, includes that Joe won Top Chef.
Because it's a Chicago story.
I understand. And Vic, I totally understand why you did the story. I totally understand.
Yeah.
But it was really funny because Esmeralda, was doing traffic with us at that time, saw me on the camera.
I saw it.
And I went, what the? And my hands went up in the air. I was throwing stuff.
Tom, it was his arms nearly detached from his torso.
Oh, man.
And he was flailing so wildly that I caught it in my peripheral vision while I'm doing the news and realized I did something wrong.
Oh man.
In my defense, it had aired. It had aired.
It did. No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, I felt bad.
It had aired, but I was saving it to when I got home. You know,
oh,
it was
the most horrible thing.
Yes, it had aired already, Vic. And it's there's a Chicago angle to the story, and of course you should report that. But I wish I wasn't listening.
I could
have gone to the can or something. Well,
that nearly happened to me with Game of Thrones.
How?
Because I came in on Sunday, and news to me,
they
decided to do a Game of Thrones special with Roe and Lauren Lapka and like all these
Roper
people.
And Roper.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
And I walk in, and there's, who's Roe? Brian Altimer.
Yeah.
And Roe Coleman. And I peek my head in. I'm like, what are they doing here? They're like, oh, they're doing a Game of Thrones special for the finale, you know?
The recap and stuff.
Yeah, the recap. I was like, what? And they're like, yeah. And so I immediately covered my ears and sprinted through the hallway. And
yeah.
Roger sees me running down. He's like, what is wrong with this kid?
Yeah.
Where is he? And they had to tell him. So I was sitting in here watching the finale because I didn't get the chance to see it live.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, I barely got away from that.
That was, I got to say, it was really weird seeing Row in here, you know, at 11:30 at night. That was just weird on a Sunday. I was like, "What the hell are you doing here?" Now, Vic, it's funny. You know what I mean? It's funny now.
Hear the emphasis he put on that.
Now it's funny. But I did watch the episode when I got home. I mean, even though I knew the show was going to win, I did watch the episode, and it was still a terrific episode. And he was the right chef to win. And this past season, the right chef won. This doesn't happen all the time, but the right chef won this past season, just a couple of months ago. Fantastic. So anyway, I hope I'm not spoiling anything, but this has been all over the news. That James Holzhauer's impressive Jeopardy winning streak is over. The 34-year-old Vegas resident lost on Monday night's episode of the game show. Both Holzhauer and rival contestant Emma Botchker. Isn't she local too?
Yeah, she's a librarian of the University of Chicago.
That's what I thought. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and his family, Holzhauer's family, told, I believe it was ABC7, they interviewed him. They had a watch party going, and they told ABC7 that Holzhauer knew eventually he was going to lose. He just hoped that it was to a fellow Chicagoan. Well, he's from Naperville, but...
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe he threw it.
Chicago's running the table right now. What if there was some inside betting there?
Yeah.
What if he had a side bet? Because he's a Vegas guy.
Well, this guy's a professional bettor, you know?
Somebody text Sam Panayotovich and ask, because he lives, Holzhauer lives in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
and so does Panayotovich. Somebody text Panayotovich.
Yeah, we'll find out, man.
Former WGN sports guy.
I like to think that we are starting an absolute Oliver Stone-ish conspiracy theory right now.
Yeah, you know what? Todd Manley better dispatch me immediately to Las Vegas. We can get to the bottom of this.
I'm going
to
need an expense account.
You hear that,
I'm
Todd?
Gonna need...
hear that, Todd? Got to get Vic to Vegas right now. But yeah, no, that's funny because it's like his family said he wanted to lose to a fellow Chicagoan. That's pretty funny that this could be a conspiracy theory of some kind. A little side betting going on if he throws it. They both answered the final Jeopardy question correctly. However, Holzhauer failed to wager enough money to secure a victory, which is odd because, as you know, Vic, you've been following this story. His MO is that he bets everything. You know what I mean? And he lost this. He lost this because he didn't wager enough money.
Going against his own strategy.
Exactly.
Further inflaming the
conspiracy theory
here.
Let's see. Until last night, Holzhauer had scored 32 consecutive wins and bagged about $2.3 million. Holzhauer's run threatened to overtake the record originally set by Ken Jennings. Jennings continues on as the TV show's reigning champion with a historic 74 wins and $2.5 million under his belt.
Jennings tweeted about it, too.
Did he?
Yeah, you should look his tweet up. It's pretty good.
Is it? Let's see. In related Jeopardy news, host Alex Trebek recently offered a promising update on his treatment for stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Some of his tumors have shrunk by more than 50%, and doctors consider him in near remission. We shared that great story last week as well. So we're going to talk about game show winning records, people making tons of money on the old game shows. But before that, here's Big Ed. Go ahead, Ed. Ed?
Nick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Nick. Hey, the other day you were talking about what was that program called Three's a Crowd?
Three's a Crowd, yes.
Well, when you mentioned that, I looked it up on YouTube. I watched a little bit of it. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, for people who don't know, and Vic, I know that you've probably never heard of this. This is a real game show. Chuck Barris, the guy who hosted and created The Gong Show, and who created the Newlywed Game. He created the Dating Game. He was known for his sort of crass television style. So this show was called Three's a Crowd. And it was a real game show. They would have a married couple and the guy's secretary sitting on a couch together. And the Jim Peck was the host of the show, who had the worst perm in the history of perms. This was like in the late 70s, early 80s.
The perm must have made an impression because I got his face right here in my
yeah, no, it's a sensational perm, I have to say. But the idea was that they would ask questions to the wives and the secretaries and to find out who knew more about their husbands, the wife or the secretary. And I'm not kidding. The game show resulted in at least 2 divorces because of their experience on it.
What could possibly go wrong? Wow.
And it was a really uncomfortable show to watch. Like, you know, like the secretary knowing like kind of intimate details about secrets that the husband had or the relationship between the wife. It was really just, it made you completely uncomfortable. So, but Big Ed, you watched it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things was one of the secretaries was talking about something about eating, and the secretary's answer was, the one time you made spaghetti that was edible, and the wife went over and started beating on her.
Yeah, no, I mean, seriously, it got that crazy. Like, there were, like, altercations on the show. So
that's precursor to Springer, I guess.
Same thing. Yeah, crazy. All right, Big Ed, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. I don't think anybody won a ton of money on Three's a Crowd.
Well, I'm sure the wives when they got divorced.
Yeah, I was just going to say, husbands lost a lot of money on that game show. But we do have the game show winning records here. So, actually, number one on this list is not Ken Jennings, although he does still. Let's see, Brad Rutter has made the most. He made $4,788,000 on Jeopardy. Jeopardy, Rutter's total includes, and he also won on Million Dollar Mind Game. The hell is Million Dollar Mind Game? He won $100,000 on that. So he has a total of $4,888,436. Million-dollar mind game. Here's the rundown on this guy. Rutter's total includes $55,102 during his initial appearance on Jeopardy. Oh, see, that's why Ken Jennings still holds that record, because he had the longest run.
Yeah, he had he was 74 wins.
Yeah, yeah.
Rutter's never lost to a person before either on that show.
On Jeopardy?
Nope.
Wow. $100,000 in the 2002 Tournament of Champions, 2 separate $100,000, $1 million prizes, one for winning the Million Dollar Masters Tournament, wow, in 2002, one for winning the Battle of the Decades in 2014, and then $2,100,000 during the Ultimate Tournament of Champions in 2005, $200,000 for finishing third in Jeopardy in 2011, the IBM Challenge and one-third of a $1 million prize in the 2019 Jeopardy! All-Star Games. And then he won $100,000 on Million Dollar Mind Game in 2011. So that's a lot of money.
And for those curious, Million Dollar Mind Game aired in 2011.
Okay.
And it was an adaptation of a Russian game called What, Where, When. So it was a relatively short-lived game there. It was hosted by Vernon Kay, and it was on ABC. That was back in 2011.
Okay. Hosted by who?
Vernon Kay.
He's British.
He's a British presenter.
Do not know Vernon Kay.
He had his own Radio 1 show back in from the mid-2000s to 2012. I used to listen to him here and there.
All right. Well, there you go. That's our first one. And, of course, Ken Jennings is next. We'll get to that, and we'll talk more game show stuff here and tell you about how these people who won a lot of money on game shows. But we got a break here on 720 WGN, and we'll return after this.
At the wall, the 3-8.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5 o'clock. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right, so we're talking about the big winners in game show history. So we're up to Ken Jennings, who made a total of $4,223,000. On different game shows. So he won $3.5 million on Jeopardy and was on for 75 shows. And then he went back, had the Tournament of Champions, Battle of the Decades, All-Star Games, all that stuff in Jeopardy. But he also won money on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Which is, you know they're doing a reboot of that?
Please tell me Jeff Foxworthy's not involved.
He's not the host. You know who the host is?
Who?
John Cena.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm absolutely going to watch that.
It's on Nickelodeon.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it used to be on Fox.
It was on Fox,
right?
Yeah. But yeah, Cena's the host. John Cena. Are you smarter than if I saw this trailer? I saw the trailer because I watched Raw last night.
Oh, man.
So I saw the trailer. They showed a commercial for it on Raw. Grand Slam. He won $100,000 on Grand Slam. What the hell is Grand Slam? He was also on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He won $100,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And then One Versus 100, he won $714. Wow.
Awesome.
So do we know what Grand Slam is, besides when the bases are loaded and you hit a home run?
Yeah. So it was a game show based on a British series of the same name.
Uh-huh.
So that the British series was a regular quiz show, but the American version was conducted as a super tournament featuring contestants who had appeared on other game shows.
So that's why he was on it.
Yeah. So it ran from August 4th to September 8th of 2007 on GSN.
Okay. Does it say who the host was?
Let's see here. It said it was presented by Dennis Miller from...
Wait a minute. Dennis Miller from SNL? Dennis Miller?
No. Yeah. That's
what?
It. Yeah. And Amanda Byram,
uh-huh,
who did the British version of Total Wipeout.
Okay.
And that ran on GSN for 8 episodes.
Okay. Didn't see that one. Missed that one. Andrew Kravis comes in third on the all-time list. He was on the million second quiz, and he won $2.6 million on that. In 2013, the million second quiz, in the main competition with the top four finalists, he won $2 million grand prizes. The producers then deliberately rounded up Kravis's total to $2.6 million so that he would break the record that was held by Jennings.
Boo.
He won $50,000 on Wheel of Fortune. He won $5,000 on Jeopardy. And he won $1,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. What is the million second quiz? These are game shows that I thought I was a game show expert. I'm losing out now. So, yeah, the million second quiz.
Yeah, that was, it aired from September 9th to September 19th, 2013. So another short run.
So another, like a 10-night thing.
Yeah, it was on NBC, hosted by Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, God.
And for the titular million seconds, 11 days, 13 hours, 46 minutes, and 40 seconds, contestants attempted to maintain control of a money chair by winning trivia matches against other contestants, earning money for every second they occupy the chair.
Okay. That one got by me, too.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. These are all short run. They didn't. Yeah. They seem to just be quick tournaments.
Yeah. You about as Spanish as Ryan Seacrest. Substitute teacher. Now we got our guy here that we were just been talking about for the past run here, James Holzhauer. $2.4 million on Jeopardy, and he also was on The Chase, and he won $58,000 on The Chase.
Now, have you seen The Chase?
I have seen The Chase.
I like The Chase.
Yeah,
I think that's also based on a British show.
Well, yeah, and I think it's the same dude.
Yeah.
I think it's the same smart dude. You're basically facing off against a very large, you know, glasses-wearing British dude who likes to talk smack.
Yeah.
Ken Olmsted won $2.1 million on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and $27,000 on Jeopardy. And then Ed Tautant won $1.8 million on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. We've got Ashley Register. She won $1.7 million on Duel. I vaguely remember Duel. She has the most winnings by a female contestant on a game show in U.S. television history. And the record for the most money won by an American who has only ever appeared on one game show. Most of these people have been on multiple game shows. Dave Legler was on 21, and he won $1.7 million on 21. That was the revival of the classic game show that, of course, was tainted by the game show scandal that Robert Redford made a movie out of called Quiz Show. Curtis Warren has a total of $1.5 million. He won $1.4 million on Greed. He won $136,000 on Sale of the Century, and he won $700 on Ben Stein's Money.
I remember that show.
That's a great. That was a great show.
It was pretty good.
It was a great show. You know, as I mentioned before, Noonan was on Greed, and I don't know how much Brian Noonan won, but he was on Greed.
I think he was on Greed.
Yeah,
oh.
Brian Noonan was on Greed with Chuck Woolery.
I love Chuck Woolery. I think he also did Lingo.
He did do Lingo.
I loved Lingo.
Love Connection.
Yeah,
Love Connection.
Oh man,
he was Wheel of Fortune. He hosted Wheel of Fortune. He's hosted a ton of stuff.
Willard. So he was before Pat Sajak.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there were a couple guys before Pat Sajak. You know, because these were mostly daytime versions, but when they went to the evening versions, that's when they got like Sajak and these other guys. And then finally, John Carpenter. And I'm not talking about my favorite filmmaker of all time.
When I saw him on the list, I was like, "Wait, really?"
Hit $1.2 million. And so you were a kid when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with the very first run, because this was the very first guy who won $1 million on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah, was this the guy that like called his
dad?
Yeah, he's like, "Hey, Dad, just want to let you know I'm about to win $1 million."
Yeah,
that was
smart
ass. So, hey, come on, that was cool. That was a power move.
Yeah, please,
I would have done it.
Well, the question was, I mean, I can't believe it was $1 million question.
It was a total gimme.
Yeah, I mean, it was the question was what U.S. president was on Laugh-In and said, "Sock it to me." How does anybody not know that that's Richard Nixon? How? That was his question. That's how he won $1 million. Then he calls his dad. "Hey, Dad, I'm about to win $1 million.
What would you have done?
I would have answered the question and been humble.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Nick DiGilio, a very humble man.
That's exactly right. My dad wouldn't pick up.
He'd tell a joke on
air. Exactly. He'd get on the air and he'd tell a joke. All right. By the way, my dad told me a joke last night, and he's going to tell it on Monday, because I was like, "You have to tell this one on Monday." I busted out laughing. Sometimes my dad's jokes, I go, "Ugh." You know, they're kind of corny. And
sure.
And many of them are like that. But this one, I busted out laughing when he told me this one. So, okay, we're going to break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about inventions that never took off and ideas that were way ahead of their time. That's all coming up right after the news, which is up after this.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m., and it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah. And yeah, 2 for Tuesday. And that's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested the Kenny Rogers?
That was Dave in Monroe.
Dave in Monroe. All right. There we go. So we're moving on to some 80s tech inventions that never really took off. Some inventions just don't work. And then we are also going to talk about six ideas that were so ahead of their time, everybody went nuts. So it's kind of invention kind of talk that we're going to be having here for a little while. If you want to jump in with any comments or anything, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Good old Gov says, hey, when Ricardo Montalban says, reach Corinthian leather, he sounds like Renhoke. I love it. It makes me laugh every time. You fat, bloated idiot. God, I love Ren and Stimpy. It's unhealthy how much I love Ren and Stimpy. 262 area code says, don't forget about the $1.98 beauty contest. That's right. The $1.98 beauty. You don't remember the $1.98 beauty. $1.98 beauty pageant was... created by Chuck Barris, and it was a beauty pageant, and the winner would win $1.98. And they had to do stupid, you know, they had to have a talent, and they had the swimsuit and everything, and it was hosted by the magnificent Rip Taylor.
Oh man,
he is
great,
a genius.
I have to know, was Chuck Barris just hammered coming up with ideas?
Well, I mean, he tapped into something, and he stayed with it. I mean,
I guess so. Yeah.
Did you see Confessions of a Dangerous Mind?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, that of course maintains that he was also a spy, which we'll see. But yeah, I mean, he definitely. I'm not sure about this. You know, if he was hammered or anything, he might have been drinking. But it was the 70s when most of this stuff was being made.
They were just throwing out ideas.
But the $1.98, I mean, just the only thing, that show was ridiculous. But I love Rip Taylor. And I almost passed out when he showed up at the end of Jackass. I swear to God. I was like, wait a minute. What? This is one of my favorite, funniest movies of all time. And they top it off at the end by having Rip Taylor in it? Rip Taylor.
Just love his bit. I just love the glitter. Like,
yeah,
so funny.
God, he's a funny guy. I was just teasing. I know it's funny. Tell him. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, $1.98. Thank you for reminding me of the $1.98 beauty pageant. I appreciate that. So we've got some tech inventions from the 80s that never really took off. Like now we have an abundance of little inventions that make life a bit easier, like affordable cell phones, GPS systems, high-speed internet, debit cards, frost-free freezers, budget airlines, and longer-lasting batteries, to name a few. But there are inventions that never really took off. The difficulty of predicting the future is that those predictions are often based on present technology. When Jules Verne wrote the novel Paris in the 20th Century in 1863, he envisioned Paris of 1960 filled with glass skyscrapers, high-speed trains, petrol-fueled cars, and even a worldwide telegraphic communications network. However, the main character still writes with a feathered quill pen. If you look at some of the inventions of the 80s that way, futuristic solutions to problems we don't have today, maybe never did. Here are some of the technological innovations that that were lifted from the pages of popular science. So here's some of the 80s tech inventions that never really took off. Briefcase alarms. Don't resist. Let the mugger grab your briefcase. As he escapes, punch a code on your transmitter. Vision-clouding red smoke billows forth as ear-piercing piercing shrieks sound. So we wrote in June of 1983. Crime was a bigger problem in the 80s compared with today, and evidently a lot of business types were worried about having their briefcases stolen right out of their hands. Though these security devices do actually exist today, they are far from common in use. These days, if someone were running down the street with pink smoke billowing from a bag, the whole thing would likely be mistaken as a publicity stunt or a student art project. So it was bad enough in 1983 that they had to invent, like, briefcase alarms. There was such a spat of briefcase robberies. I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't realize that many people carried around briefcases.
In the 80s, I think more people carried briefcases than they do now. Your classic briefcase with the handle. Now people wear the bag around their, they've got the shoulder straps and stuff like that. That's the kind of, you know, kind of stuff most people wear now. Business people and all that stuff.
You know, I can think of someone that could have used a briefcase alarm.
Who's that?
In the briefcase?
Papers. Just papers. My papers. Business papers.
And what do you do, sir?
I'm unemployed.
What's that from?
That's a Big Lebowski.
Oh.
And what was in the briefcase? Papers, you know? Just papers, business papers.
Wait a minute. Who was he talking to?
Well, he's talking to the cops. Because he's trying to get his briefcase back.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, why am I... I didn't even...
Oh, man, that's like one of my favorite bits. And what do you do, sir? Oh, I'm unemployed.
That was when he was talking to the cops?
It's after the handoff.
Oh.
Where he throws out like three Uzis taped together.
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot that. How did I not recognize my favorite actor's voice? How is it possible that I did not recognize my favorite actor's voice? Yeah. Well, if the dude had the briefcase alarm, might have been a little bit different. Red smoke would have billowed forth, and the piercing shrieks will sound. I don't know if the dude would enjoy that. Oh, brother. All right. How about this? Here's another 80s invention that never really took off, but they wrote about it. These are actual quotes and stuff from articles that the people over at Popular Science wrote about. Now, that article describing the briefcase alarm was written in June of 1983 in Popular Science. How about this? Gull wing doors. Is this how Japan's 21st century cars will look? Nissan says its experimental NX21 with the 0.25 drag coefficient and gull wing doors could be ready in the 90s. They wrote about that in March of 1984. So gull wing doors are the doors like the DeLorean has.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't exactly work out.
No. Still waiting, says Nissan. Mind you, virtually every car of the future has gull wing doors. The term gull wing comes from the door's resemblance of seagull's outstretched wings. The first such car doors were pioneered by Mercedes-Benz in the 50s. Wow, in the 50s. And they were a standout feature on the 1952 300 SL. They also reappeared, the most recent Mercedes-Benz. Also famously, the doors were seen on the DeLorean DMC-12. Which was immortalized as a time machine in the Back to the Future trilogy. However, motorists today open their car doors outwards, not upwards, because basically there are more gullwing door cons than pros. Gullwing doors make it impossible to strap bulky objects to the roof of for transportation. Alas, people still have to move mattresses in the future. There's also the risk of becoming trapped inside the car in the event of a rollover. Though contrary to popular belief, an upward swinging car door actually make it easier to exit a car from a tight parking space. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, here's the question. at the beginning of Back to the Future, when when Marty goes to the mall parking lot and is just standing there, and Doc's truck is there. All of a sudden, the truck opens up, and the gate slams down, and the time machine pulls out, backs out slowly, with the smoke and everything, and it pulls out slowly.
Right, right.
And then Doc gets out. How did he get into the truck? Because the car would not be able to go. You would not be able to open those doors inside that trailer. So he could. Now you could say, well, he got in. He probably got in. He probably got in outside, drove the car up the ramp, boom. But then how did he close the door behind him? Although it was automatic.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's just sitting inside that car with the dog.
Marty should be here any minute.
He's inside the trailer waiting for Marty, and you know, he's inside the car because he can't open those. You could not open those doors.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that was pointed out to me? Because I never thought of it. I try not to think about
those little
thinking logically with Back to the Future, like, because it's a science fiction movie
and it involves a time machine.
Yeah, so. But still, that's just a practical thing, though. Yeah, that really is physics. That's a practical problem. My guess is that when he got inside and just waited inside, he automatically closed because he wanted to have a dramatic entrance. You know, when Marty was there. And then how did he know Marty was there? Because he calls out Doc, right? Doesn't he call out Doc?
I think so, yeah.
But that was always like, that was pointed out to me the first time I screened Back to the Future at my film club a few years ago.
I'm never going to be able to unthink about that. it's like, you know, if someone tells you like, hey, you're now breathing you're now breathing manually. And then you're like, oh, wow. You keep thinking about breathing. Not any time. You ruined it.
Well,
I'm going to, the first 20 or so minutes of Back to the Future, I'm just going to dread it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, there's also some logical issues, like why is this, you know, 17-year-old boy hanging out with a 65-year-old man at 2 o'clock in the morning at a mall? Why is that?
Did not everybody do that?
No, I don't think so.
Ooh, that explains it. Ooh. It was the '80s, man. It was a different time.
It was a different, totally different time, man. Totally different. No, but I, you know, and then like it's like okay, that yeah, he had to have just been sitting in the car, sitting there waiting.
Just with the dog.
The dog. Einie just sitting next to him. He's like, don't worry about it. He'll be here soon. Meanwhile, smoke is filling up in the in the trailer.
Oh, man. Einstein, if he doesn't get here soon, I think we're gonna bite the dust.
Yeah. Great Scott. What was it? Where did they? Someone said that, where was the joke? The joke was like... I know what it was. When Saturday Night Live did one of those bits where they had people auditioning for classic movies, and I can't remember who they were. You know, I can't even remember who the cast member was or the guest, and who they were imitating. But one of them was auditioning for Doc Brown, and said. His line reading was his line reading was great, Scott. Like the character's name was Scott. Great, Scott.
Didn't they do Bill Hader as Alan Alda?
Oh yeah, his Alan Alda is spectacular.
As Marty though.
Yeah. Well, no, he was. I think he did Alan Alda on all of those.
Yeah.
Different movie audition sketches that they did because his Alan Alda is. Nobody does Alan Alda imitation.
No.
So, all right, we got a break here. And when we'll come back, we'll talk more about 80s inventions that really did not take off. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
That is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And that, of course, is the famous duet with Dolly Parton. that Kenny Rogers did. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. So we've been talking about some 80s inventions that never really took off. Like, for instance, the speaker vest. What? So here's what they wrote. Popular Mechanics wrote in December of 1985, you shouldn't wear headphones while on a bike, so plug your portable stereo into your stereo sound vest. There have been many advancements in electronic clothing since then, but more practical for motorcyclists are heated jackets and gloves. They work like electric blankets running off of the vehicle's battery. So, I guess because in the 80s people had boom boxes, so they were walking around blasting music so that everybody in the vicinity could hear it. Whereas now that's not a thing. Do people still do that?
Oh my God. I get, you
like
know,
with their phones?
Yeah, or they usually have wireless speakers. And, you know, it's one thing if
like
it's
in public?
Yeah. It's one thing if it's on the street. If someone's just like, or if they're riding their bike, they got the speaker going on the bike.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
People are doing that in their cars already, but people do it on the train.
That's unacceptable.
And it drives me up the wall. It drives me up the wall. Throw some headphones on, man. Or people watch Snapchat full volume.
And yeah, I've seen I've seen people with their phones and no earbuds in watching stuff on their phone, which I find annoying.
Yeah. It's $10 at the Target.
Yeah.
Go get some. That said, only one person would I ever allow to walk down, you know, walk in the train with a blasting boombox. That's Radio Raheem.
All he plays is Fight the Power, though.
Exactly.
He doesn't play anything else but Fight the Power.
I'm into it.
That's the only song in the entire movie. In the entire movie, he doesn't play any other song than Fight the Power. And again, I'm not complaining because Fight the Power is one of my favorite songs. But I always found it like, is that all he listens to? Well, they do confront him on that, but they don't specifically, they say P.E. They don't specifically say Fight the Power.
I like to assume that he's just listening to Fear of a Black Planet on repeat, because it's like the only tape he's got, and I'm like, I can't be mad about that.
Yeah.
Because that's an amazing record.
Yeah. Fear of a Black Planet came out after that movie was released.
Really?
Because Fight the Power was a single. It was a single on Do the Right Thing.
So that means he definitely just had the single.
It was a single on Do the Right Thing, on the soundtrack of Do the Right Thing. It was a single. And then when Fight the Power, or when Fear of Black Planet came out, which was...
Was it 1990?
1990 it came out. The lyrics in the song reveal, that came out in 1989, a number.
Love it.
Yeah, I'll tell you something, man. The first time I saw Do the Right Thing, that opening credit sequence with Rosie Perez and that song, I'd never heard that song before. And I was already a Public Enemy fan. You know, I mean, It Takes a Nation of Millions was already played many times.
That's getting a remaster.
It is?
Do the Right Thing. It's getting a full.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, the full treatment from Spike.
Well, it is, what is it, 30 years now?
Yep. It's getting the full treatment.
God, it's 30 years old. I can't believe Do the Right Thing is 30 years old. God. But yeah, I remember the very first time I saw that and that opening sequence and just listening to that song and just the sonic power of it. And just, I mean, Chuck D is my favorite MC of all time. And, you know, when they get to the Elvis line, I was like,
and John Wayne.
Good. Yeah, exactly. I was like, good Lord. And just watching Rosie Perez do that dancing and the great color and the sets and everything, it was like, I just remember being kind of losing my mind. And he was coming off of School Days, which is a movie that a lot of people dislike, but I love that movie. And I think
it's fun. I think it's
I love that movie, and I particularly love the music. I think I love the fact that it seems to me like because he had done She's Gotta Have It, and obviously became an indie sensation. And it just seems to me that the feeling that I have when I watch School Days, it seems like Spike Lee thought, I will never make another movie again, so I'm going to put everything I think of into this one. Because it is truly, it's overflowing with stuff and styles. And I just think that it was like, I may never get another chance to make a movie, so I'm just going to throw it all in there. And I love School Days. And I particularly love the music. I really love the music in it, man. I Don't Want to Be Alone Tonight, one of my favorite Fly songs of all time. It's so good. All right. Let's see. 773 air code says, the doors could open in the back of the truck. The doors are designed to open and close, not exceeding the width of the car. Really?
I know very little about DeLoreans.
It seems to me like when they're fully opened, they don't go past the width of the car. But as they open, they're going past the width of the car. Because they're going out and up. Now, when they get all the way open, then yes, it probably is even with the actual width of the car. But as they're opening, they're not. That's not the width of the car. It'll bump into the side of the door. Doc in 1955 looks as old as he looks in 1985. 224 area code. They put some wrinkles and gray up his hair. So, all right, we got a break here. We're going to get into now. Now we're just going to get into analyzing Back to the Future. All right, let's take a break. We got more 80s inventions that we want to get to, and the news is up after this.
Trailers for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys an 8-12 four-bit room.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 o'clock. It's Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. And who requested that?
That was Elaine. She wanted to hear a little bit of Roger Miller.
King of the Road.
Yes, sir.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. And we're talking about 80s tech inventions that never really took off. Like the speaker vest. That just sounds like a bad idea.
Having that many electronics in your clothing?
Just a vest that is a couple of large speakers so that you can ride around on your bike and blast it.
Insanity.
Yeah. All right, here's the next one. And these were written about in Popular Mechanics in the 80s. The electric doormat. This German invention wins the prize for the most elaborate and expensive alternative to the simple act of wiping your feet on a doormat. This is what they wrote in 1981 in Popular Mechanics. Stride across this mat and moving belts of bristles brush dirt off your shoes without tripping you. What? What? The key to the electric doormat's anti-tripping technology were belts looped over separate pulleys, alternately mounted on counter-rotating drums on each side of the mat. And it says, as we know now, the low-tech version was good enough. That's ridiculous.
So you would put your, it was a doormat that you put your feet on and it would automatically just run belts that would like scrape your shoes for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that I don't see that being successful in any way, shape, or form.
No, but it is the name of my upcoming LP.
Electric Doormat?
Yeah.
Okay. The key to the electric doormat's anti-tripping technology, I'm trying to picture this, were belts looped over separate pulleys alternately mounted on counter-rotating drums on each side of the mat. Would the word welcome move? Would that...
Hey, man, I'm tripping out. Something's wrong with this.
This doormat, man, first of all, it's rubbing my feet, man. And the word welcome is disappearing and reappearing. All right. How about the convertible car? Itel Design envisioned a world where a car manufacturer could focus construction efforts on one model of car, which is, in fact, several models. Likewise, a business which may require both a van for transporting bulky items and a sports car to woo clients could just be one vehicle for both tasks. It's essentially Inspector Gadget's car. Though the idea never took off on a large scale, cars with interchangeable components can be seen on the road today. Many large four-wheel drives have a removable rear section allowing it to function as a utility vehicle. But this car was just... how are you going to change a van into a sports car? How's that...
magic?
I don't know.
That just seems impossible. You can't just create room out unless it like maybe... like one, like, you know, you can have those tables where you take the middle out.
Yeah. Sure.
Just kind of push it. Maybe there was that, but I can't imagine that would be any safe way of doing it.
I don't know. This is the 80s, man. Everybody was doing blow. Vibrating sauna. Oh, this sounds safe. This sounds real safe. Many inventions of the 1980s were combinations of several other inventions. This device from Vibrosawn that's the name of the company, Vibrosawn International. I wonder if they're still in business. Can we Google Vibrosawn International?
I'm a little bit afraid of what might come up.
Yeah. Combines a home entertainment system with an air conditioner and a massaging chair, all housed within a personal sauna pod. This was written about in May of 1988 in Popular Mechanics. Keep a cool head while the rest of your body basks in dry heat of up to 170 degrees Fahrenheit. The $5,995 Vibrosawn body conditioner has a face fan, built-in stereo system, and adjustable vibrator. What? The creators, that's a quote. The creators probably envisioned a future in which everyone has one of these vibrating saunas in their living room, but if you want to try one out, you'll have to go to a specialist health or rehabilitation center.
Now, I did find something.
All right.
Apparently, in Australia, you can get a sauna massage machine, which kind of looks a little bit like a tanning bed, but it's almost like a pod, you know, like the pods that they would be in Alien, you know, where it like opens from the top.
Yeah.
They have some very attractive Australian people getting into these pods. And the Vibrosawn sauna massage machines are one of the most exciting profit centers for practitioners in the health and beauty industries.
So they do exist. They still exist. Vibrosawn still exists, obviously.
Yeah. But it looks like they're almost selling it like it's a pyramid scheme.
Really?
This is so weird. Sauna massage. Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is $6,000 this thing was.
In
1988, it was $6,000. $6,000 for the Vibrosawn body conditioner, which, of course, has your face fan, your built-in stereo system, and your adjustable vibrator.
You got to stop saying that.
That's what it says here. I'm just reading it. This is what the Vibrosawn people say. That's how they describe it. So, that's ridiculous. But I guess they found some sort of somewhere to sell their stuff.
I mean,
and it seems to be Australia.
And so in 1980, $6,000, that's in 2019, $18,000.
$18,000 for the Vibrosawn, what's it called? Face? Face heating face? Oh, body conditioner. the Vibrosawn body conditioner. What'd you say it was? $18,000?
$18,607.86.
There you go.
A cumulative rate of inflation of 210.1%.
So you're dropping almost $19,000 on the Vibrosawn body conditioner.
Oh my God.
But it does have a face fan, a built-in stereo system, and an adjustable vibrator. Just so that we all know that. Why did everything, you know, we're reading a bunch of this stuff. Why did everything in the 80s have to have a stereo system in it? Was that? You got vests with stereo systems in it. Now you got vibrating saunas with various stereo systems in it.
It was the hot ticket item.
Yeah.
When did the, sure it was the Walkman was out, right?
The Walkman was out at that point, yeah.
Yeah.
Walkman was out early 80s.
Jump in with the Walkman.
I used to have a Walkman. I had a Discman. Yeah.
I have the cheap knockoff of the Discman.
Yeah.
My parents are like, no way you're getting a Discman. You're getting this thing.
Disc Dude is what you're getting. You're not getting a Discman. No Discman. You're getting a Disc Dude. That's like on Seinfeld, the which one of my favorite episodes. Even though it's funny because it's at a time when the show was not at its peak. It was the final season or the second to the last season. It was 98, and it's the Merv Griffin set, which is one of my favorite episodes where Kramer puts the Merv Griffin set in his apartment. That's also the one where Jerry's dating a woman who has an insane toy collection. And she won't let him play with the toys, and so he gets her, you know, he gets her a box of wine to drink, and and they bring over a turkey. George brings over a turkey with a tryptophan in it, and then she falls asleep, and they play with their toys. But he's, you know, so when Kramer is interviewing him on the Merv Griffin show in Kramer's, and Jim Fowler, the guy who just passed away, the late great Jim Fowler, actually makes an appearance on that.
Oh, nice
with a falcon. It's ridiculous. But anyway, you know, your walk, dude, it was similar to what they were talking about, because Kramer says, you weren't satisfied with your toys when you were younger, right? Yeah. You didn't have a G.I. Joe, did you? And Jerry goes, no, I had an Army Pete. That's your disc, dude. That's the Army. Yeah, it's the Army Pete. It's the Army Pete of electronic devices.
Oh, man.
From Vibrason International, oddly enough.
I know, and I just couldn't tell why my disc dude had an adjustable vibrator. And
yeah,
it just didn't make any
it
sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. The face fan was a nice touch, though.
Yeah, you got to keep the face cool while you sawn and shake.
It's just ridiculous. Six grand in 1988 for that. $6,000. I'm shocked that it didn't take off. I'm shocked that you know, everybody in this office and in every office on the floor here should have a vibrating I can't even speak now.
I know, that'd be really nice.
Yeah, sure.
But I guarantee it would be the part time. When I was a part timer, I'd probably have to be. Your job is to produce a show and wipe down the Vibrason.
Yeah. Oh man. All right, we're going to take a break, and we've got more 80s inventions that just didn't take off. And I think as we talk about this and read from this article and have these conversations, I think we really do realize why these things did not take off. 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us in this conversation, talk or text.
England swings like a pendulum do. Bobby's on bicycles, 2x2. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children. Now if you huff and puff and you finally save enough money up to take your family on a trip across the sea, take a tip before you take your trip. Let me tell you where to go.
Well, is it Roger Miller singing a song about England?
Yeah. Big in England.
Big in England. I've probably heard that song. I just really have never, like, listened to the lyrics.
Yeah. England swings.
Wow, man. All right.
And England did back in 65.
Yeah. The year I was born. Welcome back, everybody. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Going to get your requests in. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive right here on WGN. We're talking about 80s tech inventions that never really took off, and for good reason. And we also are going to be talking about some ideas that were so ahead of their time that everybody went nuts. So sort of gadgety ideas and inventions is what we're chatting about here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Let's see, we got some calls coming in, some texts coming in. 312-981-7200. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, back in the 60s, Ford come out with a hard top convertible.
Yeah.
And it retracted back into the trunk. It didn't take off too well. But that was the thing. You never had to worry about it tearing or that. because you always had a solid roof over your head.
Yeah, that was it wasn't just, I don't think it was just Ford. I think another company, I think a couple of other companies did the hardtop convertibles, and evidently they malfunctioned all the time. Like all the time.
I remember Ford.
Yeah, well they say it stuck open in like halfway. And you couldn't get them. I mean, I remember reading about them because the hardtop convertibles was an actual it was a thing. People bought them, but the complaints and the fact that they broke down constantly, they stopped making them. And maybe they still do in some places, but I know that they had some serious problems with it.
And the other thing was the I don't know if it was Propel or what, but the pocket fisherman.
Yeah, well, that was Propel. That was all of those inventions from the '70s that they would sell on late night TV on Channel 32 at about 10:30 at night.
Everything was 1995.
That's right, exactly right. All right, Linda, thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, the pocket fisherman. You're not familiar with the pocket fisherman?
I'm not.
Pocket fisherman was like a fishing pole or a fishing pole device that it was handheld, and you could hook it on your belt or you could stick it in a pocket, and it was about I don't know maybe a foot long at most,
mm-hmm.
and it collapsed and you could fold it open and then you can fish with it.
Okay,
it would reel out and I got my dad one.
Yeah?
Yeah. It didn't work. It
sucked?
Yeah, it sucked. I got my mom a buttoneer.
What? A buttoneer?
A buttoneer was a little device where you could, if a button fell off your shirt or something, you could take it, just click it on, not sew it. Press the button, click it on. It's the buttoneer.
That seems kind of cool.
Could put buttons on anything. Yeah.
Buttons everywhere.
These devices, the whole, it'll dice, it'll slice, all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all pioneered, by Popeil and other companies in the 70s. And they were shown, when I would watch The Honeymooners or reruns of Sanford and Son at, 10:30 at night, or Benny Hill, all the commercials would be for send an envelope to this
address.
This address. Yeah. You can call the 800 number or whatever. But those were the commercials, and the pocket fisherman was a big one. And of course, you got your Ginsu knives, all that stuff that were advertised.
Oh man, the knives!
The Ginsu knives were advertised, because how many times you cut through an aluminum can and then have to cut a tomato right afterwards. That happens very frequently in my house.
Oh geez.
But yeah, no, those were advertised all the time. And I remember when Elvis died in 1977, August of 1977, as everybody knows. Those commercials, that we would see for these items inevitably would pop up it's a commercial break for The Honeymooners, so here are these commercials. All that popped up were how many fly-by-night sort of quote-unquote record labels were releasing greatest hits Elvis records. It was just, it was nonstop. Nonstop for a year. And there were so many different ones. Oh, you get Elvis's gospel music, get Elvis's country and western, get Elvis's. It was literally 2 days after Elvis died, this barrage of these 1-800 late night TV commercials selling, these not official Elvis records were popping up everywhere.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite things to watch, and I mean this in all seriousness, are the Time Life.
Oh, they're awesome.
1400 CD set.
They're awesome. The best one is the one that the band America hosts, I think, and it's like soft rock. It's like it's the Time Life collection of soft rock. I want to say it's America. It's a band like that.
Bread.
Yeah, but it wasn't Bread. So we used to watch this at Simon's at 3 o'clock in the morning and just laugh our asses off because, they would go through all these songs and they would host it like this. One of these soft rock bands would host it, and I'm pretty sure it was America. But the thing that actually set this one apart from other of these infomercials was that they were in this garden. They were it seemed like an outdoor little patio thing, and they were on patio furniture, and there was tables there and flowers and stuff, and a gigantic round pitcher of lemonade. and we could not stop looking at the lemonade. Like, we were just like, look at the size of the pitcher of that lemonade, and it became the focal point. And, you know, when I was bartending at Simon's, we would hang out after hours and you know, watch a little TV.
Sure, sure.
And that thing was on all the time. We watched it all the way through every time. Because, first of all the songs were fantastic because they were the soft rock stuff of the 70s, you know, and 80s, and those songs are fantastic and everything.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm pretty sure it was America who hosted it. I could be wrong. But it was one of those kind of bands. And the lemonade. If anybody remembers this, because seriously, I'm not kidding. This pitcher of lemonade became the focal point. We were obsessed with this. And it was in the foreground. It was in the shot every time they came back. You know, it was like right there.
Just this massive this lemonade.
Ridiculous glass pitcher of lemonade that was sitting there, like, and nobody was drinking from it. It was, and there were a couple of glasses of lemonade, and it was just, and we just kept saying, and I don't know why it fit in so well, because it was one of these soft rock, you know, yacht rocky kind of thing. And for some reason, the giant pitcher of lemonade seemed to be exactly what was needed on that set.
Mm-hmm. Just need a bagel. You got the production designer.
Just ridiculous, and we just and I don't know if anybody remembers this, but I, you know, it became a thing. Like for the Simon staff, at late at night, we would be watching the lemonade. We would call it the lemonade infomercial because they would sell the yacht rock or the soft rock, and it was Time Life. And
yeah, I want to know if you remember one that got passed around the internet a little bit fairly recently. It was this really bad. Compilation album commercial for a compilation called Punk that was from the 90s.
No.
And it was these two, there's this guy and this girl, they've got like ridiculous kind of 80s punk hair, leather jackets.
Yeah.
And then the compilation includes stuff like Men at Work, INXS, Crowded House, and Erasure.
Man, when I think of punk, I think of INXS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And they're totally hamming it up.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing about those infomercials in the middle of the night are some of the fantastic acting that goes on those infomercials. But, yeah, it's going to drive me nuts now until I confirm that it was America.
We got a text from the 765 that says it was Air Supply.
That's it. It was Air Supply. It was at, thank you very much, it was Air Supply, who enjoys giant pitchers of lemonade.
Well, next time they come to town, we'll be like, hey,
I'm not going to pay to see you. I will bring a pitcher of lemonade. You can let me
for a pitcher of lemonade.
That's right. It was Air Supply. Thank you very much, 765 area code. It was Air Supply. I knew it was one of those kind of bands, and it started with an A. Definitely Air Supply. That infomercial was ridiculous, and all the songs were great because they were all those sort of cheesy soft rock songs that I have an affinity for. And then every time they would cut back to that damn lemonade, we would just be fascinated by lemonade. We got some texts here. We're going to get to those in a couple of minutes, but we have to break for the news. Gosh, I'm so happy that someone correctly said it was Air Supply. It would have made me nuts all morning long. Air Supply enjoys lemonade. That's what we learned from that. Or they don't, and it just sits there during the entire infomercial. Oh, man. All right, we're going to take a break here. We've got more tech inventions from the 80s that just didn't work, great ideas that were ahead of its time, and just stupid items and lemonade. So we're going to take a break.
We are scorpions!
So that's my imitation of Klaus Meine. welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday! Who requested scorpions?
That was Dino. Wanted to hear Big City Nights.
Big City Nights! They keep me coming!
I saw the Scorpions one time. Bon Jovi opened for him, and he got booed off the stage. Bon Jovi got booed off the stage.
Well, they want some real German guys to come on out there.
No, we wanted music. Didn't want Bon Jovi. And this was before Slippery When Wet. This was like his only hit at the time, was a small hit, and it was, "Ooh, She's a Little Runaway."
I like that song. Oh, sorry, God. Man. I like that song.
Well, Scorpions fans did not.
I saw...
And they booed his ass off the stage.
I saw Bon Jovi when I was like 17 in Scotland because tickets were £5.
Yeah.
Which is like nothing.
That's overpriced for Bon Jovi.
It was a stadium of... That could fit about 80,000.
Middle-aged women. It was a stadium of middle-aged women.
I mean, yeah. But there were some young ladies in kilts.
Oh, there were.
So it was worth the price of admission.
Okay. Yeah, that's the only time I've ever seen Bon Jovi, when he got booed off the stage when he opened for the Scorpions.
Don't tell me you don't like...
I don't like anything by Bon Jovi.
You don't... What's the one? Living on a Prayer? You don't like a little Living on a Prayer?
Can't stand it. Don't like Wanted Dead or Alive.
That annoys me.
Don't like... Yeah, I've seen a million faces, and I rocked them all. You didn't rock me, man.
On a steel horse I ride. Yeah,
ridiculous.
Guy's probably never been on a horse in his life.
Oh, are you kidding? My favorite, one of my favorite Triumph, the insult comic dog, the insult comic dog, was when he was hanging out with Bon Jovi, the band, just ripping them to shreds. My favorite was, because you know that John Bon Jovi is in the straight-to-video sequel to Carpenter's Vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Smigel goes, I understand that you're in a vampire movie right now. And John Bon Jovi goes, yes, I am. He goes, oh, finally a film where you are required to suck. Oh, man. So Scorps. By the way, my favorite name of a tribute band of all time, because there are a lot of tribute bands have some fantastic names. Sure. They take the name of an album, like there's a Zeppelin tribute band called Presence. You know, it's all that stuff. My favorite is there's a Scorpions tribute band, and I believe they're local. The Scorpions tribute band, and they're called Scorps. That's what they're just called Scorps. That's great. Okay, we are talking about some 80s tech inventions that never really took off and just some really dumb products in general. We've opened up the thing. And, Tom, you did find the Air Supply Time Life.
Yeah, I did.
And that is some lemonade.
That is, I have never seen anybody that make that much lemonade in my entire life.
That's what it became. Just the when we would watch it, we would be fascinated and almost hypnotized by that damn pitcher of lemonade.
Because you know that some production assistant, PA was like, you know, someone told him like, I need the biggest lemonade possible.
We got to get Air Supply the biggest lemonade ever.
Also, how did I not know that the two members of Air Supply, and I like a little Air Supply.
Yeah.
Graham Russell and Russell Hitchcock. So Graham Russell Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Ridiculous. All right. So inventions and stupid products. Here's one. 630 area code are texting in because we've opened it up now to just stupid just stupid products. People are texting in and calling in. 312-981-7200. How about home trash compactors? They never took off because who wants to carry a 30-pound chunk of stinking garbage when you could just walk out with a damn bag?
An astute listener.
Yeah, absolutely. Ernie says, Nick, how about the bone speaker? It looked like a harness which was worn around the neck, but it could only be heard by the wearer. I vaguely remember that. 815 area code says the shake weight should be on that list. Did I ever tell you, you know where our office is, Tom?
Right.
Obviously you do.
Yeah.
And there's a long sort of conference table outside of our office with a couple of computers on it and workstations where people can go and do some work in the hallway right outside of our office.
Yep.
And it has become sort of, a free table, as it were. Where they leave, like, books, you know, like if somebody has a guest down, they have an extra book, and they're just going to leave it out there, and you take it for free. You know, so whatever's on there, it's for the taking.
Promo stuff.
Yeah, it's for the taking. So one morning I come into work, and I go into my office, and I get my stuff that I'm going to bring out to this up to the studio. And I walk out of the office, and right on the table is a used shake weight. It's a shake weight that clearly has been used. It's got some damage to it. And it's just sitting on the free table, sitting there. And who the hell would bring in like a used shake weight and just put it on the free table? And then you know who took it?
Who?
Ernie.
Ah, Ernie.
Ernie took it, and then they, like, I guess Patty mentioned this on the air about how, why was there a distressed shake weight on the desk, or on the table right outside of my office, and who the hell would take a distressed used shake weight?
Distressed.
And yeah, it totally was. It had some damage on it. It'd seen some miles. There's no question about it. So there's a distressed used shake weight on the table. So I guess Patty mentioned about it or something. So Ernie took it. He took it. And I guess, I don't know if he left it out there or not, but he took it. And then they did a video of him using it. And they posted it on my Facebook page and said, "This is who took your shake. This is who took the shake weight." And it's Ernie in his office back there using the shake weight.
Oh, geez.
Shake weight is classic.
I just remember that when those commercials started up, everybody was like, "You've got to be kidding me."
I mean, seriously.
It was just ripped to shreds.
South Park did a number on that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That episode is hilarious.
The cab fare.
Oh, my God. Also, SNL did a great one, too. They were like, the guys were watching the commercial. I love to watch this commercial, man. This is the best commercial of all time. And they were showing different women, like, using the shake weight. And Kristen Wiig had two of them. She was using two of them.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, the guys watching it, like, it was like Horatio Sands or one of these guys. And they go, "You see this girl right here? She gets it. She totally gets it." Shake weight. Sorry, I got back late, 404. Did anyone mention the Omnibot yet? No. Nobody mentioned the Omnibot.
Omnibot.
Why don't you look that up? The Omnibot. Joe says, "I still have a button ear. I don't use it as often as I used to." Wow, somebody still has a button ear. That's like a 50-year-old product.
Well, things were made to last back then.
I guess. 301 area code says, "Don't forget about the inside egg scrambler." Yeah, you could stick it on. You'd stick an egg on this device, and it would scramble it from the inside. I guess because it's so difficult to scramble an egg.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I did say once that I could use the peeler for the egg.
The egg peeler thing?
Yeah, for the hard-boiled egg, so I'm one to talk.
And then, of course, Mr. Microphone. You don't remember Mr. Microphone, do you? Mr. Microphone is the most obnoxious. It was the most obnoxious commercials ever. You know what? Tom, Google Mr. Microphone commercial. And then let's play the audio, because there is a classic line that has come from the Mr. Microphone commercial that has become like this iconically stupid, unbelievably ridiculous line from a TV commercial. And it's classic. So did you find it? All right, here we go.
"Hey, this Christmas party is getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone."
"Hey, what's that?"
"Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and..."
Testing. "I'm on the radio!
These kids are having a fabulous time with Mr. Microphone, the cordless microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around. Broadcast over any FM car radio."
"Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later."
"Professional entertainers use Mr. Microphone for rehearsing."
I got one.
Yeah. That's a real item.
I love that everybody is singing Christmas songs.
Yeah. But the line, "Hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later." That's one of the most repeated and iconically stupid lines in commercial history. And how the hell they sold one of the Mr. Microphones is unbelievable. But I love it. It's like, "Hey, man, you could be on the radio." "Hey, I'm on the radio." "Yeah, man, I'm on the radio." Because it's coming out of your FM, because it's coming out of the FM radio. "Yeah, I'm on the radio." No, and you're not. You're speaking into a microphone, into a speaker. That's what you're doing. No, I'm on the radio. I got a contract with everybody. "Hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later." You think that line worked?
I don't know.
The girls look they look amused.
Yeah.
You know, like, "He's got a Mr. Microphone. He's a charmer."
He catcalled me from the street.
Yeah, he catcalled me with a Mr. Microphone. How charming.
Oh, we'll get divorced in 5 years.
Yeah, but we'll sing Jingle Bells a bunch of times. And that's, I'm not, and so that's real. That's a real item, Mr. Microphone. I'm so glad somebody brought that up. We're talking about 80s tech inventions that didn't really work and really stupid items, including a Mr. Microphone. Hey, man, I'm on the radio. So stupid. Oh, God. All right, let's take a break here for some weather. And then we'll come back. If you guys want to jump in here with stupid items, and we've got more 80s tech inventions that didn't really work. 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Follow the Moscow down to Donkey Park, listening to the wind of change. August summer night.
Ah, yes. Sensitive scorpions. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talk or text and 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. And welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're here until 5 a.m. And we've been talking about 80s tech inventions that never really took off. And that's kind of segued into talking about just stupid items in general. Let's see. 708 area code says, how about the Segway? It was supposed to revolutionize urban travel, but it made its debut on Good Morning America, and now it was made popular by Paul Blart. You know, that came up yesterday. A caller called in on that because we were talking about some of the biggest pop culture disappointments of all time. And if you remember, about 20 years ago, when the hype for what was supposed to be a revolutionary invention that's going to change the way we live, that's going to change our lives, is one of the greatest inventions of all time. They hyped the hell out of it for like weeks and weeks and weeks, and then it turned out to be a Segway. So stupid. 309 area code says, I had a Ronco record album cleaner machine right around 1979. I think a lot of people had that. Ronco was another one. It was that Ronco had a ton of those items. Ronco, I believe, is where the Pocket Fisherman came from too. 920 area code says, "How about the clapper?" Yeah, it sells a lot. The clapper. So, all right, getting back to these 80s tech inventions that never really took off. How about the everything card? This was an idea back in the 80s. In 1986, Popular Mechanics wrote about it. The everything card. Resembling a slightly thicker credit card, this prototype from Smart Card International featured a battery-powered two-line LCD screen with a 10-key alphanumeric keypad. It was designed to fulfill the functions of a bank card and security access card and to be used with payphones and parking meters. It could even be used to store fingerprints, medical records, and keep track of your calorie intake. And here's what Popular Mechanics wrote about in 1986. This is a quote from their article covering this item. This is the Yulti card. A rigid piece of plastic that could be the first in a new generation of super smart cards that will help you in a variety of ways, from losing weight to saving your life. The Ulti card. One card to rule them all, they say. Open your wallet or purse today and you'll probably see a couple of bank cards, a driver's license, a library card, a membership card for the juice bar down the street, and a plethora of others. Most would agree a card that combines all of these cards into one single piece of plastic is a fantastic idea. Fact is, though, more and more of these functions are being performed by our smartphones. So I guess that was kind of an okay idea. It had some merit. Maybe not the correct direction to go down, but
kind of like ahead of its time in a sense.
The everything card, the Ulti card. Another invention from the 80s. How about Dome Homes? That used to do traffic on my show. Yeah, Dome Homes, yeah! Dome Homes. This was written about in April 1981 in Popular Mechanics, and they wrote, when completed, Monterey 1 will be the world's most energy-efficient home, claims Monterey Domes in Riverside, California. The double dome house has advanced passive and active solar heating systems. Rigid foam insulation gives walls an R-value of 30, quote-unquote. Less building materials are required to construct a dome, meaning less surface area, and in turn, a more efficient surface area to volume ratio. This means less exposure to heat during summer and less exposure to cold during winter, and ultimately less reliance on electricity for climate control. It also means that even more heat distribution around the dome's interior. In 2012, the suburbs of the United States are noticeably devoid of domes. For all its advantages, the humble dome home never seemed to overcome the hurdle of its strange appearance or its incompatibility with straight-edged furniture. Uh-huh. You know what you need in one of those dome homes? You need the vibrating sauna. That's what you need. How about the do-all system? AM, FM stereo, micro cassette recorder player, calculator, digital clock with wake-up alarm. It's all in one, and it all fits in your hand. That's what they wrote about in 1983. At the time this do-all system was created, micro cassette tapes were in common use in dictaphones. Today, they are completely obsolete. AM, FM radio is replaced by digital transmission. Suddenly, the device that did everything in 1983 is today just a digital clock with a calculator strapped to it. But today, most of us have a true do-all system in our pocket, a smartphone that can perform all of these functions, plus a myriad of other functions that the early 80s innovators never even dreamed of. AM, FM stereo, microcassette recorder player, calculator, digital clock with a wake-up alarm. It's all in one and it fits in your hand. Again, AM, FM stereo. What's going on with this? Everything's got to have like a stereo.
Everybody's got to need it. Need the stereo.
And then finally, head-mounted displays. The Private Eye from Reflection Technology is a video monitor that contains a servo-driven LED array. Result? The tiny 1-inch screen produces an image comparable with that of a conventional 12-inch display. This was written in Popular Mechanics in December of 89. We've been promised this technology for decades, but the head-mounted display has yet to find its place among the mainstream array of personal electronic accessories. Numerous attempts have been made. Forgettable ones that include virtual reality mask worn by Pierce Brosnan's character in Lawnmower Man. Why would you bring up Lawnmower Man? And Nintendo's ill-fated Virtual Boy gaming console in 1995. Back then, many users complained that the headset made them nauseous. But Google Glasses, that was a real failure.
Yeah.
But we've got the virtual reality stuff going now.
Sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's out there. I wouldn't call it. I've never been super impressed by it, but there are some people that swear by it. They think it's pretty cool.
I like to do? I like to watch footage of people who have those things on run into walls. That's what I enjoy. I enjoy when people have those things on and they think that they're in the room. They can walk to the left. They turn left. They knock a picture off the wall and slam into it. That's my favorite.
A little Schadenfreude.
All right, we got a break here. The news is coming up, and then we've got six ideas that were so ahead of their time that everybody went nuts. Yes, way ahead of our time. All right, news after this.
I can see they're away. There's a boat on the reef with a broken back. I can see it very well.
My favorite Elton John song. Who requested my favorite Elton John song?
It's coming to us from Lulu.
Thank you, Lulu. And we get an Elton John twofer on Twofer Tuesday. Yeah, man. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And, yeah. So we've been talking about inventions and stupid items that people buy, like Mr. Microphone. Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later. Mr. Microphone.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Exactly. I can't tell you how many chicks I got because of that line.
Well, at least we have to thank Mr. Microphone for that.
Mr. Microphone. Yeah, man, I'm on the radio. Yeah, I'm on the radio.
Oh, if man. Only it were that easy.
Yeah. So we've been talking about like inventions and stuff, but what about ideas that were so ahead of their time that everybody went nuts? This is from cracked.com. The unceasing forward march of technology isn't always greeted with open arms by an adoring public. Every once in a while, an innovation comes along that's so groundbreaking that humanity responds like a caveman banging his head on a rock after seeing the evil magic of a solar eclipse. So here we go. The first man to use an umbrella in Britain was pelted with garbage. Jonas Hanway came back from France with a new umbrella. Today, no one would give a crap, no matter how many Instagram posts he made about it. But in the 1750s, that made him the first man in Britain to use an umbrella. And all hell broke loose. He was continuously booed, and some people even pelted him with rubbish. So we hope it was a sturdy umbrella. You see, at the time, the British thought that umbrellas were only for sissies. Were not only for sissies, but for French people. Umbrellas had existed in some form for thousands of years, but they didn't really catch on until France made them more convenient in the early 18th century. So to England, umbrellas became a symbol of Frenchness, like baguettes or going to war with England. At best, people laughed at Hanway for being some sort of fashion-obsessed dandy. At worst, they tried to run him over with stagecoaches. Coach drivers were particularly incensed by this new technology because to them, rain meant money. If people realized that there was a much easier way to get out of the weather, they'd lose business. When one of them tried to solve the problem by charging at Hanway with a handsome cab, his response was to demonstrate another use for his umbrella by giving the man a good thrashing. England slowly warmed up to the umbrella, perhaps fearing they'd give France an offensive advantage in the next war. That's so ridiculous.
Well, if there's one thing I know about English people is that they prefer to be wet and miserable.
Yeah.
It's a constant mode.
Yeah. There's a lot of London and England stories in Craig Ferguson's book that are hilarious because he spent a significant amount of time in London. That's where he got sober. Was in London. But he has a lot to say.
Plenty of things to say.
A lot to say. So that's pretty hilarious. First guy using an umbrella in England. He gets pelted with garbage. How about this one? Disney animators flipped out about Tron, tried to boycott the movie. What? It was a Disney movie. So they were boycotting their own company's movie? Is that what they wanted to do?
Yeah, I think they were upset about the advent of CGI. We're talking about guys that were animating, like hand-drawing animation for, decades.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call Tron CGI.
Well, whatever it is.
Well, I will tell you this. People went nuts over Tron when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1982, and I don't think it's a good movie at all.
No, it's not. Neither is the sequel.
No, the sequel's terrible. And the sequel freaks me out because it's got the young Jeff Bridges thing in it, where they do the CGI on Jeff Bridges and he looks all young or weird.
Yeah.
But I remember people in my high school went nuts. I was a junior in high school when that movie came out, and I remember like a large faction of people went nuts over it and thought it was, oh my God, it's the greatest movie ever made. And there are a lot of people who love Tron. When 1982 audiences saw the groundbreaking computer-generated imagery in Disney's Tron, they reacted with a resounding, meh, let's see E.T. again. Disney's own animators, on the other hand, freaked the hell out. To them, this movie was an existential threat to rival the old gods. According to Steve Lisberger, Tron's writer and director, People used to hold up crosses when the Tron crew walked when the Tron crew walked through the halls. We were the undead. Come on, man. We were making a film that was from a netherworld, and they were very afraid. This was the future, and it was rolling down the most conservative linoleum hallways on Earth. They hold up crosses.
That's one way to deal with a problem,
I guess.
But, you know, they were right. It was the future.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, you look at Tron now, and it looks ridiculous. But in 1982, it was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like the video game better than the movie.
Which, I was always confused about which came first.
Same time.
So Disney was making the movie Tron, and they're like, let's release.
Yeah.
Because the light bike game was really fun.
Yeah, no, the video game itself, the console put the quarter in video game, the old school video game, that was a great game.
That was cool.
You know why? There was no plot to follow and no characters not to give a crap about. I will say this, Cindy Morgan is in Tron, so it's got that going for it. Disney's animators went so far as to boycott Tron's production, openly refusing to assist in the project in any way. They were so terrified that they forgot it might be smart to, you know, get on the ground floor with a fledgling medium. Even the Academy refused to nominate Tron for its special effects because they thought using computers was cheating. Is that right? Wow, I did not know about that. That's ridiculous. One member of the crew did get an Oscar for something he created in the film 14 years later. Maybe people will eventually come around on the sequel, too. No, that's not going to happen.
No, that sequel sucks.
Was it called Legacy?
Yeah, Tron Legacy. It had Jeff Bridges was back, Olivia Wilde.
Wasn't Sam Worthington in it? No.
No, it wasn't Sam. It was someone else that was
It was like Sam Worthington.
Yeah.
He's Sam Worthington-like, which means he's interchangeable with like 12 other guys.
That's honestly, the last thing you want to be is compared to Sam Worthington.
By the way, I just realized that Krapitar came out 10 years ago. And people are still... nobody cares about the sequels to Krapitar.
No. Well, they're going to make like 5 of them now.
Why?
I don't know. Because James Cameron has the money to fund it.
Oh, that movie was so stupid.
And it was Garrett Hedlund.
Oh, that's who it was, yeah.
Who, really, he looks more like the dude from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was one of those guys coming up that they thought was going to be a leading action star.
Yeah, didn't work.
Like Jai Courtney.
Yeah. All right, how about this? Coffee was thought to disrupt learning and cause impotence. Coffee has fueled endless late-night study sessions over the years, so it's ironic that pearl clutchers once accused it of making people less studious. One 17th-century Oxford academic argued that serious learning was declining because of those darned kids that were spending all their time in coffee houses. Tavern owners were also complained that people were drinking that foul liquid instead of getting plastered on some nice, wholesome booze. Soon, anti-coffee pamphlets began circling around Europe. This is ridiculous. Some tried to scare away people with the claim that drinking coffee would turn you into a Turk.
Make you Turkish.
Oh, man, people are idiots. King Charles II of England decided that this was the time to order the destruction of all coffee houses and ban the brew's sale. A lot of this stuff's coming out of England, man. This was less about the drink itself and more about Charles' fear of ending up beheaded like his dad, since coffee houses were a good place to talk politics. Charles abandoned the idea after finding out coffee had quite a few fans in England, and they were both mad at him for trying to and strangely motivated. Meanwhile, in Germany, Frederick the Great outlawed coffee roasting and even employed sniffer dogs to suss out anyone who dared betray the national beverage of beer. In Sweden, all imports were banned. And if you were found with coffee, you'd be left without any cups or dishes. Wow. All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, why drink coffee when you can get hammered instead?
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a break, and we've got more forward thinking that made everybody go nuts. But here's a few texts before we break for the new or for the weather. 815 area code says, this is a homemade item, but still stupid. People would cut panels off aluminum cans and crochet them together and make a hat. Who wants to wear a nasty beer can on their head? Yeah, that's right.
I know about 30 frat boys that would absolutely do that.
Yeah. They were big, man, big in the 70s and 80s. 630 area code, what about the big mouth bass singing fish? I like the big mouth bass singing fish. I think it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious, and it was used magnificently in that Filet-O-Fish commercial.
Yeah. Drove me up the wall.
Loved it. Carrie says the Apple Newton fits into all the categories. Ahead of its time, people didn't really understand it. Horrible failure, but now we all have one in our pockets. It's now just called an iPhone. As we were talking about those inventions, you know, from the 80s that didn't work out really well, a lot of them had merit. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of them at the core had a pretty good idea.
Right.
That eventually we are now, you know, using mm-hmm. with the smartphones and all that stuff that we have.
Even the speaker vest.
I don't know about the speaker vest. I don't know if I can go with you on the speaker vest.
Just you wait, Nick. I'm going to be a millionaire, a trillionaire.
Yeah. Now, if it was a Warriors vest that was a speaker vest, then I'd wear that.
But it only played Nowhere to Run.
Yeah. Played In the City over and over and over again. All right. We got a break here on 720 WGN. For the weather. Here's your weather, and we come back, we'll wrap up the show and wrap up all of the times when forward-thinking people were treated like crap because people were nuts. 312-981-7200. Again, if you want to jump in here, if you've got some dumb items you want to talk about, 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Your mom sells cartoon balloons in town. Blows up balloons all day. Sits on the porch swing watching them fly.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Leave On by Elton John. By the way, if you've not seen Rocket Man, you should, because it's really great. So there you go. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate Skyline studio, here till 5 a.m. And coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Also coming up, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. There you go. We've been talking about things that were so ahead of its time that it made everybody go nuts. Here's the next one. Car radios were considered a threat to public safety. Just like the speaker vest. When car radios began taking off in the 1930s, legislators and insurance companies immediately foresaw a Mad Max-like future full of gore and vehicular violence. Their concern was that listening to the radio was so irresistible that drivers would zone out and crash. Strangely, many drivers agreed. In 1934, 56% of the members of the Auto Club of New York said that car radios were a dangerous distraction. On the other hand, radio manufacturers and owners pointed out that radios actually make driving safer because they can warn you about bad weather or keep you awake during long drives or dull conversations with your father-in-law. Proposed laws against the scourge of car radio sprang up all over the country. 6 states introduced bills that would punish people for driving with their radio on or even having one installed. Connecticut fined people $50, which would be about $825 today, just for having a radio in your car. Most of these laws didn't pass, but a large section of the public was still terrified of car radios. That changed after World War II. When most white people moved out to the suburbs and the commutes became longer, people found something even more terrifying in car radios, being stuck with nothing but your own thoughts for 2 hours in your car.
True. That's what I was going to say. Like, how did people travel long distances? I'm guessing they kind of didn't prior to car radios being introduced.
Yeah. We do have legitimate distractions now while people are driving.
Yeah, that's
like your cell phone.
I would say the cell phone is probably a scarier thing to be messing
no
with.
No question about it.
Well, and especially now when most people, that's how they play music in their cars.
Right.
Or many people do at the very least.
Yeah, a lot of people do, yeah. So. People thought chess would make players dumber and more dangerous.
Every chess player I know is a idiot psychopath, so
yeah,
must be true.
By the way, speaking of chess, Joe Mantegna yesterday sang the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley. And the reason I bring it up is because he's in Searching for Bobby Fischer, which is one of the greatest movies ever made.
I just know him as Fat Tony.
Yeah, Fat Tony. Sure.
And The Godfather Part 3.
Yeah, he's good in The Godfather Part 3.
Yeah, he does his best.
Yeah. Well, everybody does their best in that movie. I actually think Andy Garcia is really good in it. And I don't think The Godfather Part 3 is a very good movie, but I don't hate it like everybody else does. And I certainly don't blame Sofia Coppola for it.
No.
She got such an unfair... I mean, it was so unfair.
Well, because it was supposed to be Winona Ryder, right?
Yeah, she dropped out.
Yeah. Sofia Coppola's not an actor.
She's a director. Great director. Say, the next time someone tells you that video games make you stupid, lazy, or violent, kindly inform them that 19th century people used to say the same thing about chess. When chess started getting popular in the Western world, critics consider it far dumber than whist, a card game in which cards changed value during play, leading to infinite variety. Meanwhile, chess, with its pitiful 1/9 trillion possible games, was considered kiddie stuff. One physician claimed that chess was causing smart people to waste their brain power on a selfish and unsocial species of warfare. What? Instead of doing something helpful for society, like getting mad about board games. Another critic lamented the kids who got into chess, they were being robbed of their mental energy by a game that, quote, affords no benefit whatsoever or whatever to the body. Which is not true. Professional chess players have astounding bladder control. Oh, man. Hold on a minute now. All right. The warfare part was also a sticking point for some critics who claimed that the gritty realism of the game, horses fighting people, towers that come out of nowhere and crush you, so on, would make players more prone to violence. That, or it made kings and generals ignore the actual wars raging around them because they were so engrossed in a match. If those complaints sound contradictory to you, it's only because you've been watching too many exciting chess live streams on Twitch and your brain is now mush. Yeah. I think Searching for Bobby Fischer is like the only movie that's ever made chess exciting.
Yeah, I've never been super into chess.
Yeah, me neither. I've played it, but...
I'd say Monopoly is more likely to make you violent than chess. Or because, Risk.
Why? Because you land on somebody and they've got a hotel on their property?
No, you've never gotten into an argument over like Risk?
No, I don't play Risk.
Or Monopoly? A little Monopoly fight?
Nah, not really.
See, I grew up with two younger brothers.
Oh, well, that explains it.
And I'm not proud of this, but when I was, you know, when I was younger, me and my youngest brother were playing Risk, and he just pulled some real BS. So I punched him right in the nose.
So it was like Newman and Kramer playing Risk.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, I don't know, not proud of it.
I have friends who would, you know, like that episode in Seinfeld, would play like marathon games of Risk.
Mm-hmm. Take days, weeks.
Like, absolutely. Like they were into it big time. Sometimes we'd be out somewhere. We'd be like, "Where's Dan?" He and Len are playing Risk again.
No, this is the same game from last month.
The same game, yeah. And then finally, America vehemently opposed pasteurized milk. Oh, that's good. That's real healthy. For centuries, people drank their milk raw with a nice dose of disease-causing bacteria instead of cereal. That changed when French biologist Louis Pasteur came up with a new method of heating food to kill off the bacteria, which became known as pasteurization. Well, it should have changed everything. People in America and parts of Europe valiantly fought against this shady, not drinking germs every day business for decades. Why? First of all, people had gotten used to the taste of filthy milk, and that they thought that pasteurized milk tasted cooked and unnatural. They also didn't like the idea of paying extra for this silly, not dying of preventable diseases business. More surprisingly, many doctors and pediatricians opposed the process under the reason that children needed the good bacteria and nutrients in the raw milk, which would be destroyed by pasteurization. In an 1892 medical news article described how, quote, children who at first had fattened and thrived on sterilized milk became emaciated and anemic. Eventually, they perished from non-nutrition. One doctor complained that pasteurized milk turned children into, quote, deformed creatures.
That explains so much about me.
Good Lord.
Got this extra pinky toe.
Yeah.
It's all because of that milk.
Straight from the teat. That's going to end up on the show on Friday, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I drink a lot of milk. It's pasteurized, obviously.
Yeah.
But I drink an enormous amount of milk. I live alone. I go through a gallon of milk in 5 days.
You serious?
Yeah. I drink milk with every meal. Every single meal.
That's a lot of milk, man.
I like it.
That's fair.
What do we got on the show tomorrow?
We got strong bones. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Brian Wendorf, who is the co-founder of the Chicago Underground Film Festival.
Oh, cool. Very, very cool. So another film festival. Boy, Chicago has film festivals all over the place.
Yeah, and each one very unique.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Okay, we'll talk about that, and it'll be Wildcard Wednesday also.